Okay, the public hearing on the 2014-15 budget will now come to order. Mrs. Stecker, roll call, please.
Mr. Aller?
Here.
Mrs. Wilkinson? Mr. Elger?
Here.
Mr. Escalante?
Here.
Mr. Kuchinski?
Here.
Nelson? Mr. Kenwood?
Here. Okay, the 2014-2015 budget has been on file and conveniently available for public inspection beginning June 24, 2014. Notice for the public hearing on the budget was published on June 26, 2014 in the Glen Ellyn News. To date, the district has not received any verbal or written communications on the 2014-2015 budget. Is there anyone present who wishes to provide public comment?
Was that a yeah for us, or?
I'm sorry. No.
No.
For Mike Wood.
Anyone here that would like to provide public comment? No? Okay. Hearing none, may I have a motion to adjourn the public hearing?
Motion.
Second.
Second?
Second.
Second.
Okay. All in favor, say aye.
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 Okay. Public hearing is now closed.
All right. With that, the board will convene for a closed session. That we need to
before the
don't I have to open the regular meeting first?
Yeah. So we're going to open it, but those are our next steps.
Early?
Yeah, I would like to, so we can.
We'll open and close it.
We'll open and close it, and all will be well, so we can continue moving forward.
Okay.
So the August 11, 2014 regular meeting will now come to order. I assume I don't need a roll call, correct?
You do.
I do. Roll call, please.
Do we do the pledge first?
Mrs. Wilkinson. Mr. Alger.
Here.
Mr. Kuchinski.
Here.
Mrs. Nelson. Mr. Ellis.
Here.
Mr. Escalante.
Here.
Here. Okay, we will adjourn to close session. So may I have a motion to adjourn to close session to discuss the appointment, employment, compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal of specific employees of the district or legal counsel for the district, including hearing testimony on a complaint lodged against an employee or against legal counsel for the district to determine its validity.
Motion.
Second. Second. Thank you. Second was Mr. Ellis, yes.
Okay. We can go in my office.
Roll call.
Oh, roll call.
Roll call.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
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 Sure. Yes.
Yes.
Sure.
Okay, we just came out of closed session, back into open session, and if we could all please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, we're at the public participation part of the agenda. I'd like to remind members of the audience that speakers should identify themselves, complete a public participation form, and limit their comments to no more than 3 minutes. Personal complaints and criticisms about staff members, students, or other members of the district community should be initiated privately with the appropriate district representative. Also, profanity, interruption, and other interference with the orderly conduct of the meeting are not permitted. All questions raised will be forwarded to the appropriate district 41 staff representative for a response, if a response is warranted. Are there any members in public who wish to address the board at this time? Mr. Cooper, please.
Jeff Cooper, Glenelg. I was pleased to hear President Kenwood show up about public participation and on being responsive to the stakeholders. Time to move out of the black hole we've been in on some matters. Can we now tackle the assistant principal funding source? I haven't heard a peep on this since I brought it up in June. It is a new school year, number two for Dr. Gordon. I trust there aren't any kids on bikes waiting to do tricks on the first school day this year. No Will Richardsons or any other $7,000 institute-based speakers either. May it be a year without anyone at our expense going to Colorado or coming to Colorado. We have now paid around 20,000 questions out are related to these trips. The latest trip are the three from Colorado that came here in April that apparently came back in June for a week. The training they provided in that week cost us over $4,000. It's August 11th, and I still don't know what hotel, airline, limos, and food costs were, let alone any extra hours that we got to pay our teachers. I thought that $10,000 and above expenditures had to be specifically board approved. So I wonder, does it matter if it's one check and one vendor, or a compilation of trip after trip after trip after trip for one purpose that totals well above that $10,000? I think the board has been used to it, and I would like someone on the board to comment on this, please. One last idea for the new year. It is time that our board drew a line in the sand for the people that they represent on the issue of paying TRS payments for some of the Central Service Administration and the individual school administrators. Back of the envelope math says it might be around $100,000 a year that the people are paying, the taxpayers are paying, on behalf of the highest paid employees in the district. This needs to be discussed and become an action item. We out here deserve it. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? No?
Yes.
Yes.
Angel Oakley. You got a copy of my draft. I had shared when it came back, and I had gone ahead and drafted up what I had hoped the personal device policy would look like. And just really quick for the school board is committed to providing all students a safe and secure learning environment. The use of personal technology is a privilege, not a right. Given that personal devices pose a safety concern and the district provides ample technology to students for educational purposes, the district does not allow the use of personal devices during the school day unless an exception has been obtained. Exceptions are only allowed when they find authorization form on file with the school district indicating compliance with current procedures and safeguards, and may require payment of a fee. The district is not responsible for loss, theft, or damage of personal technology. For K through 5, personal devices, including cell phones, are not permitted on property unless an exception has been granted. And exceptions may be granted for before and after school, medical needs, and educational needs. For 6 through 8, you see the difference. Personal technology will be allowed on property as long as both the parent and the student have signed the acceptable use of technology authorization form and it's on file, and the device stays in their locker and is powered off during the school. This is different than the current draft that you're reviewing, which basically says they could have it on the person. 2, personal technology may be utilized during school for academic purposes only if administrative approval has been obtained. See the form. This is different from what you're reviewing because what you're reviewing allows the teacher to just decide. 3, personal technology must be non-disruptive. So regardless of exceptions, if it's disruptive, it's a problem. 4, students will be allowed to use personal technology before and after school on district property or during district-sponsored or related activities as long as it's not disruptive or inappropriate. Those things follow what you're currently reviewing. I really am very concerned about the idea that they can carry it on their person at any time, and I'm also concerned about the perception of the current draft that in elementary that it's allowed as long as you've signed some kind of form. I think it's better if we have a little bit stronger language. It gives the idea that it's really not allowed in K-5, but we'll make some exceptions because we understand some people need those.
Okay. Thank you. We'll be discussing this later in the agenda, so thank you for your comments. Anyone else?
Just over two more.
Nice.
Well, I don't know about all the details of the policy that's being presented. I'm here as a parent of two freshmen at West, which I know is a different district, but I have a third grader at Lincoln also, and I'm here to tell you that I'm concerned about the cell phone policy as well. So I told my two daughters that I was going to be coming to this meeting tonight, and we were going to be discussing the use of personal devices in the classroom, and they insisted that I come. In fact, my husband dropped me off. They were in the car. They said, go, Mom. They want me to tell you that phones and iPod touches are being used inappropriately throughout Hadley. Okay, this is coming from the students, not from me. You know, we've talked about this before, they're being used in class, in the hallway, at lunch, in the locker rooms, during exams, lectures, and free time. They're viewing Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, pornography during school time. They're also cyberbullying and cheating on tests with their phones in their pockets. I came tonight to sort of flip the coin, because we talked about why they shouldn't. So I'm asking, why should they? What are the benefits of having their cell phones with them and their personal devices in the classroom? How will the phones enhance their learning? How will the phones help them do better in school? How will it help them get better grades, create healthy relationships, succeed in life? If our children need a calculator, they can use one of these. Calculator. The students are saying that we can use it for a calculator. Not true. So if anyone can tell me some good reasons why they should have the devices during the school day, I'm listening. Right. There are none. There really aren't any good reasons why they need to have them on the person. Please, pass a policy that restricts phones during the school day. The kids don't need it. The taxpaying parents of District 41 students are insisting on it. It's time to do the right thing and to take a stand. Please. Thank you.
Just for clarification, devices for you are K through 8?
K through 8?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else?
Just wanted to echo. I'm Lamelle Yannicelli. I've been here before. I wanted to echo what Angel spoke of in support of. I also have a daughter who's going to be at West this next year. I have another daughter who will be a 7th grader this year. And I just wanted to kind of point out, I had written a note to the subcommittee about how different the policy implementation became, how it changed over the course of the time that I've been exposed to Hadley. My oldest daughter, when she came in as a 6th grader, would have never dreamed of having her cell phone on her. She understood the policy to be either in the locker, la la la, and nothing changed in the policy, but the implementation of the policy changed, and the teachers sort of got lax about it, and it wasn't a big deal anymore. And I can tell you that my 6th grader, when I was telling her where I was going, she was like, really? Why? Like, she 100% thinks that it's right and they're allowed and that there was never even a policy about it. And I just think that that's kind of an indicator of how the implementation of any policy you put in place is going to be pivotal to its success. And also, I have concerns about the ability for our teachers to successfully implement a policy that says that they can have their cell phone on them, but it can't be on. Because really, for a teacher to know whether or not the kid is abiding by the policy, they really have to go around in every class and check their phones. I mean, really, right, in the hallway, because they're just powered back on. So I think a policy that doesn't make a policy that's difficult to enforce is not going to be a successful policy. And I think we kind of saw that with how the implementation of a policy that never changed in the eyes of our students. I have actually really rule-abiding children. Lucky me, right? So I can tell you that if my 8th grader or my 6th grader had thought that the policy still was that the phone was supposed to be in their locker powered off, they would have been abiding by that policy, but neither one of them thought that was even an issue anymore by the time the end of this last school year came. So I would recommend that you think hard about the ability of our teachers, our administration, to enforce any policy that you put in, because it's only going to be successful if kids aren't getting away with it. As soon as 5 kids get away with it, 10 kids get away with it, and then 30, and then nobody even remembers where the line was anymore. That's my comment.
Great, thank you. Anyone else like to speak?
Chris. Well, I can echo a lot of what's been said, but I'm really asking the board to do as they committed. And I think what you did was commendable. You reached out to the community, and you provided an opportunity for the community to give their opinions about personal devices at school. And community members came. And I'm aware of at least 34 parents who took their time, I mean, everyone's busy, summer vacations, to come out and present their ideas. And of all 34 parents who came out, not a single parent was asking that a cell phone be in the classroom. In fact, the discussions were around them being a distraction. And I have to say, I also spoke to my daughter just to see what the reality was. And she said, well, and this is her word, the popular kids are sitting around, I guess that means she's not popular, fooling around on their cell phones, and I use it occasionally, and she's a big rule follower, but she said, yeah, it's a distraction, and they're not being used for academic purposes. And so, back to the idea that you reached out to the community gave feedback, and you didn't have droves of people coming in and saying, please give my child a cell phone, they need it to do their work. You know, it absolutely is required. Instead, what I asked my daughter is, well, if, you know, it's, well, my math teachers, you know, used it, but I said, well, what if somebody didn't have a phone? Oh, they used the Chromebook. And she said, actually, that was better because we did graphing and it was easier to read and such. So I asked her just to have a better understanding of actually what was going on. So, again, you asked for the feedback, you got the feedback, and I think there were pretty clear messages. And even with the teachers, there were a few teachers who came out, but you only had two. I counted like 75 happy teachers. You had two teachers who said, yeah, there may be some benefit. Well, that's kind of a nice two, but I wasn't hearing a need to. And all this is echoing the message that Dr. Gordon clearly sent out to all parents that stated personal devices. He confirmed with all building administrators, which I'm assuming is the principals, and they kind of know what's going on, that no personal devices were needed for academic reasons. That was a clear statement back in June. I think it was June 20th. And so, as you're discussing tonight, there are some questions, and I have to say, I would echo, because I was talking to a colleague of mine today at the AMA, and she said, what are you really trying to ask? Because I'm trying to put my thoughts together. I said, I'm trying to ask the question of why is this being considered, because it doesn't make sense. It's not what the parents are asking for. It's not what the teachers are asking for. It doesn't fit any local policy for middle school. So why would we be doing a huge departure from the protocol if nobody else is doing it, high-performing schools aren't doing it? We need to learn from that. If they're not doing it, there must be a message to it. So as you're reviewing, I have just three, four quick questions. I hope you will have a chance. So it really is, how does a new policy incorporate the feedback in the listening session? For what I've seen, it's not reflected at all. It's not what people were saying in the community. And we have to go back to the original reason we're looking at this. It was a major safety breach. So how is this
I do need you to start to wrap up.
Okay, it's been 5 minutes. How is this new policy creating safer access? And, you know, what best practice benchmark did the board use for creating a more relaxed policy? I think you're hearing clearly. And I know other parents, most parents aren't really aware that this is even a new policy, but those who are pretty surprised and very worried about their children's academic experience. So I hope you will use this as discussion points. And I truly hope, as others have said, that you choose not to allow them in the classroom because I do not think it's going to enhance my son's
academic
experience.
Thank you.
John, can I make a comment because I attended those?
Sure.
Okay, so I'd like to make a comment on the listening sessions as well. I attended all three listening sessions, and I attended the report out of all three listening sessions. They were done in tables of parents, and the one thing I will say is there was no consensus at the tables. At the tables, there was discussion on this too. But I heard numerous parents tell me that they wanted their children to have phones, usually for some sort of security reason. They wanted to be able to get in touch with them before or after. I heard parents and students giving me examples of why they wanted to use the phones, that they talked about taking pictures of the board so they didn't have to write it down. So I disagree with the fact that you're characterizing the listening tour as saying nobody wanted phones. There were a lot of people in those 3 days that said there were a lot of people, parents, and there were 10 high school students, and there were a lot of parents at that meeting who told us that we need to do this. There were even parents who stood up and said, we shouldn't even do this as a policy. We should do this ourselves and parent our kids better. So there were differing points of view at the listening session, and I heard it all because I went in with a different point of view and came out with an enlightened point of view after listening. But I listened to everybody, not just the people that agreed with me, and that's how I changed my thought process in this, because I learned during those sessions that these phones are useful. So I would take exception with you categorizing the fact that the listening tours, everybody said that they didn't want phones. It's not the case. Absolutely not the case, and I attended all.
Thank you. Anybody else have any comments?
Is anyone willing to
Mrs.
take
Stecker?
Minutes of their time?
No, we're not.
Kurt, you came in late. Did you have a comment? Or you good? You're good. Okay.
Kurt, are you willing to give 3 minutes of your time?
No, I don't believe we're doing a conversation.
Okay. Presentation, reports, initiatives, and updates. FQC construction project update, please.
Jack is here this evening to talk about where we're at with our construction. He'll also talk to us a little bit about the more aggressive bidding timeline.
Sure.
And what that looks like and the possibility, of completing construction by August 2015. Sure. I'll hand that over to you, my friend.
Okay. Thanks for having me back. You should have a board update in your packet. I brought some pictures to maybe give a little more visual representation of what's on paper, so I'm going to go from the pictures rather than this. But if you have any questions, let me know. So the first couple are from Churchill, and what you're seeing is this is the pad that's getting ready to have the underground storm detention system installed on it. That's the whole backfield at Churchill. So I think there was, I might have touched before. Can you go back and help me with that? Yeah, this is the first one. So what they do is they separate out the black dirt from the clay. They get the excavation done. They put down the fabric, put down the stone base, and then just pile the pipe on top of it and get them all connected. So the next picture, Mike, if you wouldn't mind. So right now they're just staging the pipe around the site as we work around a very sloppy, wet, muddy, dirty place to work. Hopefully we'll get a break from the rain one of these days. What you see in the background where everything is kind of staged up here, that's the build-up pad for what will be the new hard surface playground. And that playground is what needs to be completed so that if this bidding schedule holds and everything works out well with the bidding sequence, we can move playground to that location once this area is done so that construction of the Churchill addition can begin this fall, which goes back to Paul's comment of pulling forward that whole construction sequence so that it can be done by August 2015. So that's what's going on at Churchill. At Forest Glen, the main entrance to the school is right here, and this is the new pathway, covered walkway, which has got your asphalt path. It's got mulch on either side and the scaffold canopy all the way out to the portholes, right? And once you get to the portables, then there's either stairs or accessible ramp up to the two locations with the walkway down to the second one. And then on the occupied side, on the west side, the emergency egress stairs and the landscaping that's been put in place for that location. And then also at Forest Glen, this underground detention work has been completed. All the pipe is in place. Backfilling has taken place. So that system is basically done. It's a matter of site restoration at this point. And then finally, at Forest Glen, this is the excavation for utilities and unsuitable soils. We had water. We're working on sanitary sewer, rerouting around the new addition. And then this was the exit point out to where were the portables in this area, and a new exit strategy has been implemented within the school. And over the next 2 weeks, weather permitting, our goal is to finish the utilities, backfill this, and get the building pad ready for the addition of Ford Squad. And then on to Lincoln. These are the portables that were on the west side have now been relocated to the north side behind the school. Landscaping has been taking place. Those are the emergency egress on the west side of the portables. And Mike, the next picture is, this is the canopy going out to the portables. And then there's been an access through this area here so that for deliveries and so forth to the school can still take place. And then the canopy goes out. Inside, this is the open area on the west pod of Lincoln. Basically just showing you that the ceilings are closed back up while the inside work is completed. In this open area, this is showing that the furnishings, this area was cleaned first. All the furnishings have been moved over. Now they're coming back to this side to clean. And the next picture shows that they've been able to get into the classrooms and get the floors waxed. So the classrooms needed to be available to the teachers starting today, which they were. There's a little bit of work left in these classrooms to on the exterior wall to finish over the next week or so, putting some windows and doors in. And then outside, Lincoln's, the swings and foundations are ongoing. So this is just a picture of progress photo taken today. And then in the background are the roofer's trucks. The roof is the new roof, the roof removal and the new roof have been put on. The roof is watertight, and the top wear layer has to be completed this week.
It's tested last night.
What's that? Yeah, yeah. Tested. Yeah, and it was dry.
Oh, that's
so
good.
Yeah, without the top wear layer. So yeah. So the portables are in place. You should have in your packet for John. As well as yourself, Dean, the signature for the ROE inspection forms. So those go in, and then you'll have occupancy. At Franklin, the inside work is done, and in terms of the modifications needed for emergency egress, a lot of work going on outside. Things have progressed pretty well. You can see this wall in the background is actually, this is all masonry. This is all concrete bearing wall block going up. And then this tan color behind there is actually the finished form line or concrete wall that will be part of the courtyard on the north side. We've had a bit of a complexity come up in this area, which is why this is an excavated with a sanitary sewer line that was in the old road easement from the village of Glen Ellen that goes right through Franklin's property, which wasn't where it was supposed to be. And so it's taken us, I don't know, two or three weeks to get that worked out, get it reviewed with the village, get it through the engineers, get pricing so that we can deal with that. So now that can begin in earnest, and we can finish this south area, hopefully get that foundation wall up and out of the way before school starts. Next picture, just another progress photo looking at a different perspective, and I think I have one more. Showing that form liner, this will be the finished wall of that courtyard, and this is the secondary egress from the large gym that will come through the construction site and go up next to the portables in the northwest corner of the site. And between now and the 23rd, we'll either pour the concrete stairs that will be the permanent access point out of there to the north, or we'll build a set of temporary wood stairs so that we can accomplish the secondary egress out of the gym. So that's what's been going on over the next few weeks at Churchill. And we're going to go ahead.
How much of a cost impact is that sewer line?
You said it was going to be somewhere around $10,000.
$8,000 to $11,000
is the estimate. Now we're going to do it on a time and expense basis because there's a bit of an unknown factor associated with what we're going to find when we get down there. So to take the risk out of it for everybody, we'll just do it on a time and expense basis, but that's the budget range that we're looking at. Over the next few weeks at Churchill, we're going to be digging, building playground pad and placing pipe. at Forest Glen. Really, work should be wrapped up in the next couple of weeks in terms of that site, and then we'll just be doing some restoration of the site at Lincoln. We'll be out of the building while school's in session. We'll be going vertical on the addition, and the same at Forest Glen, or at Franklin. We are currently out for bid for the building portions of Forest Glen and Churchill. We had our pre-bid meeting this afternoon. Bids are due the 22nd. We'll do scope reviews and put together initial recommendations for the first board meeting in September for review of the finance of the board meeting for discussion, and the second board meeting in September for award. Contingent on everything going smoothly between now and then. With the idea being that at Churchill, the major issue with Churchill is building the site up to the elevation for the addition. Because we're coming in from existing, which is 7 or 8 feet above the existing playground. So we've got to build all that up. So the major activity at Churchill this fall is going to be building that pad up, and then we'll be able to put foundations in and start to go vertical from there, depending on the weather. But the main activity at Churchill is going to get that up. And the benefit is, with that amount of activity, if we can get to that point where we can put foundations in before the winter hits, then we'll be able to deliver the building in August of 15 rather than in December of 15. So there's a four-month advantage. You know, basically, we're already disturbing the site with the activity that we've got going on. So instead of lengthening it, we're trying to compress it. And then at Forest Glen, because we're going to have the building pad ready by the time school starts, once all the contracts are awarded and so forth, we can do foundations, underground utilities, and then see how the weather goes, whether we can go any further or whether we stop until the spring. And all of that then just gives us a better comfort level of delivering that in August of 15.
And so that last part you added at Forest Glen is a key change from the last time I got it.
Okay.
And you are going to have the ability to put foundations in this fall season.
Yes, if everything holds, yes. That would be really the only logical activity that we could do without putting us in any kind of...
Because prior, we were just going to end up building up the pad and stop there for the winter.
Right.
That was what was prior scheduled.
Right.
But the fact that you're out to bid and that you may have approvals from the village allows you to deal with Churchill and Forest Glen, and I think it's important that, at least from my perspective, to understand putting the foundations in, if you have the weather that allows it, and then covering it for the winter,
right,
is a key contributor to being successful on your schedule for August. Because in the spring, at least in Chicago,
as you can tell,
so
our spring is never ending this year.
There was one discussion that we had where there was some reluctance to go that speed at Forest Glen, and it's important from a scheduling standpoint because of our springs, that if you can get the foundations poured in a drier season, you could benefit from what could happen if you have a wet spring, because you just don't want to dig a hole and then have it rain, and dig a hole and then pump it out and have it rain and then keep pump it out. So
right.
I'm glad to hear that. I just wanted to.
We're still dealing with a little bit of a schedule impact on weather at Franklin because of the delay in digging, and this sewer thing didn't help us. But you know, we're not raising any flags at this point. We're just thinking we just got to get through this phase, and then we'll be able to make up time once we start going vertical. I mean, that masonry right there is already ahead of schedule. So that should be able to help us pick up those few days that we've lost a lot.
Anybody else have any questions?
Bob, I thought we heard tonight that
we just received notification that the village has approved our building plans for Forest Glen and Churchill. So we're good to go with the village.
For the expedited schedule?
Yeah.
Yes.
So you did a really good job of planning out this first phase, right? I mean, you gave us timelines, you had slack, rain, so you're on schedule. I think your notes said 5 days behind, mm-hmm. but you think you can make that up.
Mm-hmm.
Outside the obvious of trying to get this done sooner rather than later, why are we trying to speed this up? I mean, you did such a good job with our scheduling and our costs and our budgeting. And I mean, we're hitting on all cylinders right now. Are we adding a layer of risk by trying to get this thing expedited? Are you going to lose some of your project management comfort because winter lasts till it does last till March around here, but
still,
yeah, April or I want to hear why we want to go faster outside. We just want to get the buildings done. And Joe kind of touched on it. You know, if you can get your slab built in a dry season, that helps in the spring when it actually does come next year. But
to be honest with you, I kind of tempered my comments earlier. I'm not sure if you picked up on it, but our goal is if everything goes well this fall in getting the pad built at Churchill and getting to a point where we can start the foundation of the Churchill, everything holds well, we'll be able to finish by August. Our safety valve is that right now everybody has the expectation that the worst case is we'll be able to finish in December of 2015 at Churchill. Okay. Churchill is a much more complicated site to work with because of the amount of fill, build-up, utilities that we have to deal with. So if we don't take advantage of pulling this schedule up right now, that risk is there every single day on that project from the start of spring in 2015 all the way through to the end of that job. By being able to pull it up, we could, by keeping the pressure on, we should be able to deliver it by August. But if something goes really strange on us, weather-wise, or something unforeseen happens, we now have the safety valve that we're not going to deliver any later than what we originally thought in this year of 2015.
Yeah. And there's two critical things. That safety valve, what you're doing is if you do go into that extended period, our cost will go up. Supervision is one of your biggest things.
Yeah.
So you're still compacting this into a schedule with that safety valve, that you are lowering the risk of going beyond that original schedule and then seeing your costs escalate pretty rapidly. The other thing is, Patrick, these students are from Churchill, Pride Forest Glen is a simpler site, less complex. You'll have more certainty of starting in August in your classroom. Right now, the Lincoln and Ben Franklin students are going to start in a portable. This is my understanding. And then we're going to deliver. You're going to deliver classrooms. We keep saying that we're going to deliver in January 1st. And these children are now going to use these new classrooms as students. At Forest Glen, it's not going to be that way. Mid-year, there's no mid-year. Come August, Jack and his team finishes these. Bam, they start in the classroom. And to me, I guess I would ask the academics in the world, but that's a huge benefit, too.
Yeah.
So I see two things besides that.
Yeah, I was trying. I understand the scholastic side and getting the kids, and I'm just, when you try to rush things through, you kind of lose focus a little bit because you're trying to rush things through.
Yeah.
But the way you put it is, the more pre-work we can do for phase two in the fall is that release valve. But hey, the worst case scenario is we're going to deliver when we said we were going to deliver.
The rush was the permitting.
Yeah.
The rush isn't the construction. The rush is the permitting, because permitting is such a wild card, especially when you have a complex site.
I really think we're actually mitigating the risk by this rather than increasing the risk.
So what's the additional change that... Is there going to be incremental cost for doing phase two prep work in the fall?
No, actually, I think that's another benefit.
Right.
I don't want to oversell this, but I think you're going to have better cost bidding now than you will be bidding later. And starting sooner, you get more work done in the current pay scale rather than more of it going beyond
June 1st of next year.
So you're gonna realize some cost efficiencies versus cost increases.
And if the minimum wage goes up too, it's triggered to the minimum wage.
So my interpretation of the pre-work, to your point, is that it's not necessarily gonna take away from the resources that are finishing up the current deliverables, which is Franklin and Lincoln. That pre-work
is a good question,
outside of that. So I don't think that's going to distract from it. So.
And if there weren't even done, there's enough masons that they could have if there were all these masons. That's not the construction labor issue. It's not here in Illinois.
So currently the plan, which is I think what ultimately everyone cares about, the Ben Franklin classrooms are available starting...
Right after your Christmas break.
Yeah. January, whatever, right? And then the Lincoln classrooms are available...
Same time.
Right? So that's ultimately, you know, what...
Deliver two schools in January?
That's what the people will care about.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So those classrooms will be available starting right after the Christmas break, and then everything holding true, and then everything else will be ready starting in August the 15th.
So we'll just need, I don't know if we're factoring some additional work from the staff during that period to transition or not, but... That could be something.
Like it'll be furniture.
It'll be the furniture. Yeah, furniture move. It'll be moving.
Furniture move and then some technology.
So we just have to make sure we
count
that as well. But it's been going. I mean, the portables went pretty smoothly. There's a few things that wrap up in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah,
we've already kind of got a small taste of that already with the portable.
Okay. Any other questions?
Jack, thank you.
Yep.
Thank you.
Appreciate
it.
Thank
you, Jack.
Nice evening. PTA Executive Council updates.
Lori is not here tonight. She's trying to make sure the Hadley Den project is completed. They have many more students attending than they were anticipating. So she's out purchasing and getting whatever necessary items for tomorrow evening's den, Hadley Den activity. So she sends her regrets, but we're able to move on.
All right. Terrific. Thank you. All right, action items, consent agenda. Are there any items board members would like removed from the consent agenda to be considered separately? Hearing none, may I have a motion to approve the consent agenda, which includes human resources personnel report, employment recommendations, resignations, and dismissals, finance facilities and operations, treasurer's report, investment schedule, monthly revenue expenditure summary report, summary of bills and payroll, vandalism damage report, disposal of surplus property, 2013 and 2014 FOIA report, school district payment order July 8th through August 5th, 2014, serious safety hazard and other matters, the approval of board meeting minutes June 23rd, 2014 public hearing and regular board meeting, and July 8th, 2014 special board meeting. Motion, please.
Motion.
Any second? Discussion? Roll call.
Mr. Alger?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Lipinski?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes. Superintendent's recommendations, adoption of 2014-2015 budget. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation to adopt the 2014-15 budget as presented?
Motion.
Second.
Discussion? Anyone?
We talked about this in Finance Committee. And it's
you want to summarize what came
out? We've talked about the budget for a number of meetings. So I mean, I think the Finance is comfortable with the budget as it exists.
Everybody feel they got the information they needed to review it and justify the spending? Okay. Roll call, I guess.
Mr. Korchinski?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Alger?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes. Okay, post-insurance of compliance for Illinois government use of bonds. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation to approve the post-issuance compliance report as presented?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
Any discussion? All right, roll call.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Korchinski?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Alger?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes. Okay, board policy, second reading and adoption. Section 9, the acceptable use of technology. I guess it's only part two, right? Mm-hmm. Is that what mm-hmm. it should be? Revised 8.5.14. Paul, you want to provide some background? And
yeah, we've had obviously a number of conversations about this policy, this revised policy, which is turning into policy 900. We did need to slow down on some other aspects of the policy outside of Section 2. We feel like that's the piece that really needs to be addressed sooner rather than later. The other components policy committee will be taking on to vet as thoroughly as they vetted Section 2. So that's why you'll only have Section 2 available to us tonight. We've had three community listening sessions that were referred to, well attended. Really appreciate the process that we've gone since we began this process. I just really appreciate the process itself and the conversations and where we're at tonight. Policy committee met last week, and I'll hand that over to Dean to talk about what the policy committee did and where we're at tonight.
So as you'll remember, the last time we brought forward the policy to you, you came to us and there were some things that you brought back and said you'd like to see some changes and for us to go back and do more work, and we said we'd do the listening tour as part of that and then come back to bring you the policy tonight. I'd echo what you said about the listening tour. It was very well attended. I think there was between about 60 to 65 people who attended. We had parents, we had administrators, we had teachers, we had students. I'd like to send a special thank you, if that's appropriate, to one of the parents, Angel Oakley, who came to all three listening sessions and actually spent an awful lot of her own time to educate me on a lot of these issues. And I certainly do appreciate that. I'd also like to extend the same to Kurt and to Stephanie Clark, who's not here, who besides coming to the listening sessions, also came and sat through the policy committee and spent the time going through the policy committee with us. So I appreciate that as well. In this, I will admit, I kind of went into the entire process with thinking that maybe phones shouldn't belong at all. I see that there's some uses for phones now after listening to everybody and the teachers and the parents, and I recognize the concerns that people have with having devices available for the kids and the safety issues. There's a policy that's before you that is not NAP. We expect that once we pass the policy, if we do pass it, that we'll get to work immediately on the administrative policy, administrative procedure, which will entail how to move forward with the policy and how it will be how it will affect the students and the teachers and other people, other stakeholders in this. In that, I'm assuming that we're going to be looking at some additional technology that I hope won't have a large financial impact on the district, because I think we have some creative ways to do this where we can not only improve the control of the devices so the devices can't be used for things like they've been used for, but also possibly extend that to the parents so that they can do that at home as well. So there's a possibility that we can help parents with this, which is a thing that we heard over and over again at the listening tour, that we might be able to find software that we can put on the phones as a condition of a child being allowed to bring a phone to school that will not only lock it down when it's at school, but lock it down when it's at home. And a lot of parents sounded like they were into that. They were very interested in that, and there's a small cost for that. So one thing I will note in the policy was pointed out by one of the emails that we received, I believe, today, is if you guys are looking at policy 9 right now, for students in grades 6 through 8, number 2, it says personal technology may be utilized during school for academic purposes with direct guidance from teachers. In addition to that, it should say number 3 above, parents may apply for a waiver for medical academic purposes for the use of personal technology during school hours. We have it up above. What we found was that there are some students who have medical conditions that they're actually using the devices to be able to communicate with the nurse and with their parents to make sure they're monitoring things like calorie intake, caloric intake, and things like that. And it was an oversight on our part not to have it again in the second part. So I think we can do that when we finalize this. But I'd like you to consider that when you're looking at the policy that we need to add that. Do you have any questions? And the other part of it was, and I want to make sure that maybe I get this in there because I know two of our board members aren't here, and I read some of the comments that you sent to us. The listening tours are just that. And I mentioned at the beginning of each of the listening tours that we're not asking or expecting parents or teachers or people at the listening tour to write the policy for us. That's what we have to do. We have to be able to write the policy, review it, and approve the policy. But what we do is we allow that to influence us and change our position on this. I think as we do the AP, we're going to make this much better than most other policies and other districts because of the control with some of the software we're able to have us.
Anybody have any questions, comments on the policy?
Just a comment. Erica, thank you. Dean, thank you. A lot of good work put into this, a lot of coordination. I second your thoughts earlier this evening. I went in there with a different personal thought, and through the listening tours and the talking to people offline personally and at the tours, came out with, to use your term, an enlightenment. I think you captured very well the sentiments that I heard in the policy committee conversations that we had, people that I spoke to, my personal feelings. My mind was changed during the listening tours and talking, so I find those very helpful. But again, thank you, Erica and Dean, for putting that together. But I think this is a good policy to be scoped out through procedure, so thanks.
Dean, I just a real quick question. I know that in order to put the VAP together, you need a policy.
Mm-hmm.
Just walk me through conceptually, kind of how the timeline is going to work on the AP.
So with the AG, that is an administrative role. That is my role to take on once.
Okay, so
once there's approval, hence the term administrative procedures, we'll own that. We will follow the policy. We'll write those pieces in there, share. We'll have those conversations.
But I guess, Paul, what's your involvement in terms of the policy committees?
I mean, my role, and I'll let Dean, is to follow policy. So once board sets policy, I will write an AP that matches this and that supports our principals and teachers with great clarity on what they need around this policy.
And your goal is to have that implemented by the beginning of school?
Correct.
Clarity and consistency.
Okay.
Correct.
So any delay would delay?
Nope. Yeah. As soon as this is done, my team will get to work on it, and we will be presenting that to you.
I hate to get an AP, but
then don't.
Because the board's not supposed to. Go ahead.
Okay, I'll weave it into my other thoughts before you back. I'll hide it so you don't get it. You'll be ready for it, Paul.
Okay, I am taking notes.
You have another follow-up question?
No,
on these other sections, the timing. I know this is critical because we want to get the AP written prior to school starting. But do you have a sense over the fall we're going to be looking at those, or you guys are going to meet?
The other sections?
Yeah.
Oh, we're going to have to, once Catherine comes back into town, we'll set up another mm-hmm. meeting, and we'll get together, and we'll make it a public meeting, and we'll see. I don't know if it'll require a listening tour. It may require some sort of a modified listening tour, mm-hmm. because there's a lot to do with the employees
yes.
of the district and how they use it,
right.
So we might have to do that. But if we do that, we might as well invite the community as well, if
sure.
we do something like that, if it's required. I want to say something about the AP because it isn't really our, one of the things we're always cautioned about as board is to write policy and then let the administration write this. I want to say that during this time, it was very clear that I believe the boards and the administration has a very similar mindset. I think that there were some things brought out in public comment in the early part of this procedure that were eye-opening to some of us, and that will stop. And I'm convinced that the AP will require that to stop. I believe there will be a strong AP. I think that there's a unanimous discussion that we all had about tightening this up, and I'm convinced that we have the capability to do that.
That's kind of where I was going to weave in, because we heard a lot of that at the listening tour.
Yeah.
So it was a theme that was, I think, heard loud and clear. I want to thank Erica and yourself, just as Patrick did for the listening tours. I went to two of them, the first two, the Monday and the Wednesday. My perspective, I know everybody has their own perspective. I talked to some community members even today, and I saw a wide range of opinions, from a no technology at all opinion to cell phones are used in a very positive way. I think a child brought up an example when we were parachuting in, mm-hmm. so we weren't there to engage, but to definitely listen and get the summaries at the end. And I thought it was a great way to get all the feedback. But it dawned on me the same thing the student does. I do at work, and I didn't even think about it with my cell phone. It was like, wow. I do it mm-hmm. normally. And it's a habit to do something to benefit me at my job. So it just makes me mindful that how much technology is part of our everyday, and we are training these students to do this, to be 21st century learners and job ready, as we call them, even at these young age. Mm-hmm. From my standpoint, so there's a wide range of what I saw. There's maybe a lot in the middle and kind of deviations out, but that was my perspective, which is clearly different than other people's perspective, and I understand that, but that's the perspective I bring, is my perspective. Mm-hmm. I think these listening tours are part of our decision when it comes to policy. I think last July 8th, you and I had talked to you prior to that about certain districts around us and what they're doing, and how it's a little more like this today, at least in my interpretation of their policy and what's in their handbooks. So I think that's a component. So we're not just taking one component here. I think it would be wrong to put 98% on the listening tour, just as it would be wrong to put 2% mm-hmm. on the listening tour. So, I mean, you come here with this discussions that Patrick had, I had with people in the community about what they were thinking, doing research around what other school districts are doing. For me, one thing that was very enlightening, and it's not in this policy, and I'm going to ask us as a board, and Paul, you, mm-hmm. is the chief guy here at District 41, pay special attention to K through 5, where we're not allowing personal devices. Yet there was compelling evidence by teachers, not parents, mm-hmm. but teachers. And the good thing is teachers can communicate with their principals, and then it can come through you. So I want to make sure that we're letting our teachers know that you're not going to be able to do this anymore. You're not going to allow that literacy level 3. You can't have an e-reader come in from the outside. So that's a change for some of our teachers. And it's a big change. And the compelling email, which we all received, and I asked Laura to send it to us, I mean, it had ideas in here that I'd never thought of. Like, what level book kids read matters. Kids pick up a book and they may be in third grade or fourth grade at a level J, and that's not where they're supposed to be, and they're not likely to read that because they don't want to go get it in the book then. Mm-hmm. But when they have a reader, no one knows what they're reading on their e-reader. So there's no thing to be ashamed of. Peer pressure happens at those ages, not just at my age. It happens everywhere. So to me, I want to make sure we're keeping a tight eye on that. Because it's lacking in this policy, and it hurts me to approve it with it lacking, but it doesn't hurt me to ask you to make sure we're paying special attention. Because this is 21st century education, and technology is a powerful tool. It can be misused, and it can be used properly. It sounded like she was using it in a very proper manner, one that was good for her students. So I see that being taken away, and we're here as a board to provide our teachers, our educators, with the best tools they can have. And today we're changing that. I see it in my eyes. So to me, that's a critical thing that's lacking. I know a lot of folks, several folks at the listening tour
don't want that there, but that's where I came from leaving and listening to her. And I wasn't there like you. I wasn't there. I know my opinion changed. It did. And I thought that was a great thing that we had.
Can I address that one?
Yeah, go ahead.
Because you said it beautifully. I appreciate how you captured it. But we are allowing for parents may apply for a waiver for medical or academic purposes for just that. So I heard those teachers, because I think it's a conversation with a teacher to a parent saying, you know what, I'm seeing your child, and he or she is either doing really well or struggling or whatever the case may be. Let's talk about this, because I think this situation applies for. I don't think it should be across the board, but I think it should be on an individual basis at the elementary level, and that's why we had that piece in there. It was really purposeful about that, because we listened to those teachers who said, no, it's not across the board. Is it every kid in our class? No, it's not. But there are certain kids who are going to perform, and the teacher said, I've seen it. They haven't picked up the book, but they are willing to bring this piece of technology to and from. So if it's this one-on-one conversation, I am very comfortable with that, but I appreciate where you're at, that we're not
hamstring.
I was going to say, that's why we put that in.
Okay,
yeah,
well, that...
For me, that was the biggest thing I had a problem with, because the teachers did make a pretty compelling case for the e-reader, so...
This is the way that the teacher has the power to use those tools, and the teacher knows that, then that's easy for me to support. I was just looking at the teacher authorization form and making it a step higher than that. But if this is the level that makes that work for those teachers, then
the principal needs to be in for it, and this will be in the AP.
Right, okay.
So we're not just running rampant, and we don't have things going all over the place. But we have a real purpose for it. And to me, that's an important aspect.
Okay. Well, that is a great point.
You just articulated it beautifully. So thank you for doing that.
That's the last point I have. Mm-hmm. I have one more.
Absolutely.
I read it and I have two things. That was my big one. My minor one that I have to say, because it's just too random, I got to say it. Because I look at the Hadley, where, you know, I'm convinced, and I could be wrong, and people can, you know, I'm always happy to get data afterwards and make changes later, if that's the data. But, you know, these e-readers are important to have. The kids are storing 20-some books on there, the cost to get them, the fact that you can get them quicker, all those positive arguments that were made, and I think that's critical. They were made out at those listening tours. I know, you know, there was silence here because we don't speak when one of the public speakers was. But there are a lot of compelling reasons, and these teachers were there, at least at the two that I was at. I was not there for Saturday, so I can't speak for that. But that said, you know, and I brought this up in my early redundant arguments I was making in the July 8th meeting, was the lunchtime thing, where we're not allowing you readers at lunchtime. I know this is the reason I'm on it, because I was a geek. And, you know, to me, I studied for tests during lunch hour. But what I heard from the administration and even the students that were there, that most people don't use it. But that does surprise me at some level, that you don't use it to study prior to and after your test. Because if I had my notes, I mean, before, my notes would be on yellow paper and be all over the place. If I had my own e-reader today, they would be there, and I'd have them in files, and I'd be able to go to them, and I'd be probably much more efficient than I was when I was in junior high. So to me, it's not a big thing. It's the lesser of the issues based on what I heard from the listening tours. But I still think in the back of my mind there is this, you know, in my opinion, at lunchtime you eat lunch and then you socialize. Well, not all kids socialize. You know, some kids just like to study. They're academics.
They love to read.
They love to over-prepare for a test that's going to happen next period or two periods from now. An easy way for them to do it, and I'm convinced of that because I did hear that from the students and from the teachers and from some of the parents, that they do everything electronically now. I mean, if we could only do all that, my work would be a lot more efficient. But that's
right,
how these kids do it. Yes, we have all this out here. So that was just one point. I think it's important. You know, I put a lot of thought into this, and I thought it was important to bring those. But I'm okay. I appreciate the clarification on what was more of my major issue after being at the listening tours. And so that's where I'm at on this policy.
Thank you. So, as I've told you guys, policy, I'm not good at policy, right? And when I read this, I had a couple problems, and I think I have to ask some questions just to make sure that we all are on the same page here. So, when we say personal devices, we are talking phones, iPads, e-readers, anything that has to do with a personal device that's not issued to a student by the school.
Yes.
So that's what we mean by that.
Correct. Wearable devices, because those are on the way.
Yeah. It'll be watches soon.
That's why we didn't want to call it cell phones.
Yeah.
Personal technology.
And where I struggled, you know, I don't know if I was enlightened, but where I struggled was I feel there is a difference between the cell phone and the other one, only because I feel the cell phone is the biggest disruptor of, you know, quite frankly, humanity at this point, where it's the easiest one. It's like it's the passing the notes in the classroom. It's the easy one to tuck away, game, you know, get on the internet. We have the least control over it just because it's on somebody else's plan. And, you know, I still struggle with the question of, you know, why does anybody, at least K through 5, need a cell phone during class? Okay. And philosophically, the way I read this is, it's okay to bring your personal device. You got to sign a waiver, and it's got to be turned off. And where I struggle more philosophically is, why isn't it say, okay, we start off by saying you can bring it in if you follow these rules, and I still struggle with, I think we should clearly say, and my opinion would be, cell phones are not required. At least K through 5, unless it's after school activities. What I think the policy is saying is that you can bring it in, it's got to be off of your person, which I'm assuming means in your locker.
Well, in K through 5,
they don't have lockers, so backpack or whatever.
Yeah. Right, because they don't get it till fourth or fifth grade, right? Which I don't know if I'm just, again, because I'm not a policy guy. You know, are you essentially saying to the community, cell phones, your child can bring a cell phone to school. They got to turn it off. They cannot use it during school, K through 5, I'm talking. Mm-hmm. The teacher does not have the right to come in and say, okay, everybody use your cell phone if you want to. Right? That'll be the administrative policy. They cannot use it. It's to be put away. It's to be turned off. Mm-hmm. That's what we're saying to the community.
Correct? K-5. That is exact. Personal technology, I think it says it best in number one. Personal technology will not be utilized during school hours.
That's intent of it.
And the way, and again, not being a policy person, right? If I were to send my kid to school and say to myself, gee, what's the technology policy? I'd read the first three sentences and say, okay, great, it's cool. And what I was worried about was the tone of of this. You know, it's a privilege. Oh, cool, we're 21st century. You know, it's not a right grade. I read it, and I'm like, okay, it's allowed. If I sign a waiver form, and then shame on me because I don't go into the specifics, but I was worried that a lot of people would probably do what I do, and I just felt the tone of it to me just didn't make me feel comfortable. I imagine what we're saying is what I'm saying. There's no need for a cell phone. Teacher cannot authorize you to use a cell phone. Now, there are health reasons, the diabetes one, you know, the calorie thing, all that is perfectly legit.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that if the waiver is clearly for academic or health purposes, that's fine. But I think when I think of the administration piece of this, we don't want, in my opinion, at least K through 5, just my opinion. And what I thought I heard in the listening tour and reading the summaries, what I thought I heard is there was an overwhelming majority of folks that said, no cell phone, K through 5, turn it off, can't use it, teacher can't say we can use it. To your point, I thought the teachers did make a compelling case for an e-reader, but the way I viewed that is an e-reader that doesn't have internet access and capability. So is that what we're all saying in this K through 5? Is that what the policy is saying, even though the way I'm interpreting the tone and the philosophy of it, it's sort of reversed in my mind? Is that what we're saying?
What we're saying in the policy for K through 5 is that it says right in the beginning. Well, first off, you have to go to the paragraph that starts out in the beginning. And that's that if you're going to send a form, you have to have an authorized use form. Part of that will probably be, most likely, be that you're going to be required to pay for and install a piece of software that's going to disable their browsers.
So that's the MDM solution.
MDM solution. So that's this part that says that's what the form is for. When you get down to K-5...
On the MDM solution, though, if your assumption is that, we don't really have a definitive solution, plan, cost to that. Are you saying without that, this policy is...
No, I'm not saying that at all. I'm not saying that at all because you can do it just by saying...
No.
There's ways in the procedure to restrict it as well. I think there's ways in the procedure to make it better, and that's what Paul's going to look at. But that's the top portion. The next part says personal technology will not be used during school hours, K through 5. It's just not going to happen. And then during school hours, if you have it with you, you've got to be required to turn it off and keep it off your person. The waiver is for medical and academic.
Yeah.
So that's if we decide that there's a child who really benefits by an e-reader, that's when the waiver comes in. There's no waiver to say, I want my kid to have a phone on during the day in K through 5. There's no waiver for that. The waiver in K through 5 is specifically for medical and academic purposes. Where we discussed and argued was around parents who want to be able to contact their child before or after school. So that's why we're saying you don't need to use it in school. It's not part of it. We have all these other devices. You're not going to use it. We're not going to let a teacher say, oh, by the way, if you have your cell phones, pull them out in K through 5. Not going to be able to do that in K through 5. So that's what we're saying.
Okay. And then on 6 through 8, and again, now I'm talking myself into, okay, these are probably the worst offenders.
Mm-hmm.
And we're now giving, and this is where I struggle with the whole cell phone versus personal.
Yeah.
Right? Because there is a place for some technology in those grades because there are some apps that are being used in
yep.
that sense,
yep.
right?
Mm-hmm.
But that cell phone, I mean, the reality is it is the biggest disruptor. It is Instagram, it's Facebook, it's all that stuff that really has no value. And Joe, I remember you saying, you know, kind of go back to your speech. Appreciate it because it allows me to refer to it again. But you go back to the speech around those things. In my mind, really, just don't have a place in the education in the classroom itself. So I still struggle with this whole
personal things. Just so you understand,
the cell phone.
Some kids use their cell phone as their e-readers. Some kids only have one device. They don't have many devices. So when we're talking about this in 6th or 8th, we're talking about the teacher who says, here, you can use your Chromebook, or if you have a cell phone, you can pull it out to do this on it, if people want to do that. And that's where they were saying, the teachers were saying, some of the kids prefer to use their own because they're used to using it. So that's where it was. Now, when you talk about these personal devices and you try to differentiate between the iPads and the e-readers and things?
No, I'm only differentiating the smartphone and the rest of it. Because you can't, you know, your watches are coming,
but you can text on
those
things, and you can get to internet on those things, and it's changing all the time, and there's data plans for those things. So you can actually have a pad that has a data plan.
Sure, but it's a lot harder to sit there in class with your iPad.
They're getting smaller all the time. And these tablets are not, and that's what we're saying. Let's not differentiate. Let's say technology, because this technology is going to change all the time.
We did talk about that at policy committee, and I was the one who brought it up. I was like, you know, why not? And actually, I mean, it was a really good conversation. Community members were chiming in as well. Like now, these iPads and everything else have data plans. They all can do the same thing.
Yeah, and you know, it's just. You know, 30 years ago it was the TV, right? But you didn't
bring it to school.
Well, no, but you would if kids started carrying their TVs to school. You tell them, hey, leave them at home, right? I mean, TV.
The old console TV was pretty heavy.
TVs are pretty small now too.
You
right?
got the strong.
Yeah. Yeah. Said, don't bring them.
Don't bring them.
Yeah,
that's where we start.
So I don't know, guys.
John,
you know, for me,
so what's your
for me? This is
clearly, you know, the step in the right direction, right? Because, and I'm confused when you guys say where you were before this and where you are now. Because the way I, if I get past my the tone of it, it's, hey, you know, K through 5, you're not using anything unless it's academic, health, signed waiver, and approved. Otherwise,
academic
it's off.
And health.
So
yeah.
On that, we're on the same page. I still struggle in 6 through 8 why any kid needs a cell phone.
Okay.
It just, to me, it leads to so many opportunities to do the things that are just the most disruptive. That's where my struggle is.
But that's the point of this conversation is not to gain consensus and, you know, we're all on the same page voting the same direction, right? So you do have your concerns, you have your questions, and you're entitled to them. They're great. But
thank you.
Hey, let's, if you want us to change your mind, I don't know if we can do that tonight. But if we're going to take a vote, we need to take a vote on it.
We are going to vote.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
My point is, we can go back and forth and rehash all the conversations that you had in policy, uh-huh. all of our listening tours conversations, but we gotta vote.
And when you said you weren't sure about the evolution, I would say that my going in position was, it's a lot easier as a board if we just say get rid of all of this. Get rid of all this stuff. We bought all this technology. Let's just get rid of all of it. Tell them they can't bring it. Leave it at home. And that was my going in position, was just let's make this simple on us, on the administration. Then I started finding out that really wasn't necessarily making it simple. While it would be simple for us to pass that rule, we would have a lot of parents who would take great exception. And worse, we may have a lot of parents who just outright refuse to follow the policy and send the phones in anyway. And then we could spend all of our time doing nothing but taking phones away and devices away from kids. So then I started hearing how some of the technology was
used. I think
if
you told the kids to put their phones away, they would put the phones away.
Can't you do that right now?
But that's what we're doing in 6th through 8.
That's what it says in the policy.
That's exactly what that policy is.
Hold on, guys. But that was sort of the policy before, I guess.
But policy is an enforcement. Policy is policy.
Which goes to the implementation.
Which is...
But that's true.
But that's different than what we're doing tonight. Let's put that together so everybody can put it together.
Yeah.
This is policy. Otherwise, you're opening up something that's not this...
Next thing you know, we're starting to do the administration's work, and we will mess that up.
Yeah, we'll mess that up.
All right, so to...
And one of the things that we learned through this was there was not the consistency. We learned that there was not the consistent application of the policy. We heard that. We saw that. We had principals who say, you're right.
And now we've had to listen to it.
We absolutely heard that. So that's something that I have to own to look and say, no. Because as the parent said, whatever policy you select, you still have to apply it. You still have to manage it. You still have to implement it to its fidelity to whatever level the board is asking me to implement. That's the crux of this. The AP, my principals, myself, Lori, Karen, my team, we have to implement what you're asking us to do. And my expectation for my principals, my APs, our teachers is what the board says, this is where we're at. Here's the AP. This is my expectation. We're going to have, because we have policy, not fighting. Fights happen. I appreciate what you said a couple of weeks ago. There are some behavior pieces. We've got to address those pieces. But we have to have a consistent application of the policy and the AP. And that's where I have to do a better job. I own this. Nobody else. I own that side of the house.
So, to Patrick's point, is that he doesn't want to hear me review all this again.
Yeah.
Would anyone have a problem on the 6 through 8 amending the policy to reflect that the personal devices can be used for academic purposes based on teacher's guidance, but that the cell phone should not be used?
The cell phone would not
be considered a personal device that was used.
I would because I think it's already there's other devices that look like pads that do all the things cell phones do. They were talking about the fact that on an iPad, not only can you text, you can do phone calls. You can do FaceTime.
Of course you can.
They could have a call going on in a classroom if we let it. It kind of goes back also to something that Patrick wrote and sent to all of us at one point about really what we're talking about here is disruption. What we need to do is we need to have a policy that allows the technology in a controlled way, but we need to be a little bit tougher on disruption. We need to understand that this policy is really about disruption and that the technology is going to change over time, but we should never allow the students to be disruptive in class, whether it's talking out of turn, fighting, as you said, using personal technology in an improper way. That's where we have to be better. And the teachers have a lot to do already, so we have to make it as easy as possible for them to be able to categorize this.
I sent the email to Paul and John to be distributed to the board.
Yeah, well, that's how I got it. That's how I got it. So you're right. You didn't send it to all of us. It came through that.
Good clarification.
Because you couldn't send it to all of us, yeah. But I thought it was a good point. And that's where I think there was also a lot of evolution of thought of that this cannot be sort of like, do the best you can. We have to have consistency. We can't allow, I don't know that we ever did, but I know it's been accused, and we probably did these tech days or bring your own device days. None of that can happen.
That goes to what Paul is saying.
Yeah.
You know, now the policy is written and AP is in place. Now, if we have staff disciplinary problems, that's something that could come to the board.
And that will come back to the board.
Parents talking to principals and principals talking to the administrator and the administrator letting the board know that I'm seeing inconsistencies in the application. How that escalation process occurs, as it is defined per public, you know, escalation. That's what
And we already have policies.
Yeah, and that's
so we're okay. And that's what we're trying not to do is write policy. We're trying to make this so we're not writing policy on top of policy on top of policy.
Motion.
Any other discussion? Can I keep talking about it?
No.
Sure you can.
Well, of course you can, John. It's your prerogative as a standing board member to have this conversation go to the rest of the night.
My thank you as well to Erica for facilitating this and Dean for kicking it off. I do feel that the K through 5 is the right, at the right place. I feel it's just a personal feeling that I think this, from an educational perspective, keeping our kids away from these things as long as possible is, in terms of the cell phones as a disruptor in class, is important enough for me to not support the policy on 6 through 8. But I do appreciate the work you guys put into this and the folks that came out and came to the sessions.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just leave it at that.
I hope you'll change your mind depending on the AP. I hope it will convince you otherwise when the AP is ready.
Yeah.
All right.
Roll call.
I don't think
I would
need a motion.
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 Second.
Second. Discussion.
Motion.
Roll call.
Mr. Escalante.
Yes.
Mr. Bochensky.
Yes.
Mr. Ellis.
Yes.
Mr. Elder.
Yes.
No. Okay.
Motion passes 4-1. Just clarity.
And there's no issue that there are five here, right?
No, as long as we have 4-1. Yeah.
Just want to make sure. No, no good.
There might be an issue if we have 5-R.
All right. Second.
There's another.
2110.
Another board policy. By the way, just so we're clear, because it is a second reading, it has been adopted, right? We're not...
Mm-hmm. Right.
Just want to make sure that's clear. All right, 2110, qualifications, terms, and duties of board members. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation to adopt the recommended revisions to policy 2110 as presented? Do I have a motion?
Motion.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Any discussion?
I don't believe anything has changed since the first reading in this policy. I could be wrong. I think that Maureen, we didn't change anything from the first reading and the second reading in this policy. Okay. That's just correct.
No. So as you guys know, I already said it last time, I'll be voting no on this. I just think it's, you know, in my discussion with the IASB and their general counsel, this was viewed as bad public policy. I felt it, as we went through it here previously, it led to a lot of uncertainty and disruption of the community, sort of politicized the process, in my opinion, and it's not really consistent with what other boards are doing outside of a board that's being advised by the same general counsel. And I really do think that, you know, we should just transition from the vice president to the presidency. It has nothing to do with my personal situation, but I think that's the right way and more consistent with the way things work. So I will not be supporting this. Anybody else feel that way? All right, terrific. Then roll call.
Mr. Bochensky?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Eldridge?
Yes.
No. Okay. Superintendent's
4-1.
Yeah, 4-1. Superintendent's report, internet filter update.
So Mike will be giving the board and the committee an update on the Smoothwall implementation. We're in the midst of the installation process. I couldn't be more pleased with our IT team. With all the work they already had going on in the summer, being able to do this. This was no small undertaking, no matter what anybody said or thought about this process. This is a large organization that impacts over 4,000 people and over, I think, 7,000 pieces of technology. This was a huge undertaking during this time. So I'm very appreciative of the team, the IT team, everybody working diligently to ensure, no pun intended, as smooth a transition as possible with this. So with that, I'll ask Mike to give us a brief update on where we're at and what are the next steps.
Thank you. On the 30th of June, we have an NBA student wall come in. Assisted with the implementation and installation. This took a few days. It was a Wednesday, so we wrapped that up on a Friday. That was the continuation, our discussion about that. And then physically getting the equipment in place, getting it online. And really, we spent this past week in tweaking it, getting the configuration, you know, a little bit more in line with what we do. First thing we had to tackle was some of the major pushes and pulls for our hosted servers here, with other servers outside on the internet that we do business with. Whether it's for online ordering, even some of the interaction we had with Google to push up data back into it. So that's pretty much what we've been working on this first week. One of the things you may notice, there were a couple of layers of protection with this content. We're talking about personal devices or devices that are brought in from outside the district. If they don't have an account to log in, they really can't get on the internet. So you may have seen that Smoothwall page pop up. So things like Chromebooks, even the iPads that are within the district, will require dual authentication. So you'll have to log in, not just into your account, but log in to get on the internet. And that also provides us a little bit more accountability as far as knowing who is logging on and what kind of activity is going on with that login. Still working with their support team on a couple of reports that we talked about. Traffic history from the previous day, as well as the block sites, attempts at getting block sites, that report. We're pretty close to that. I hope to have that in place within the next week. We'll definitely have it in place before the first day of school. And that would be the automated report that not just the principals, but the IT team would see as well. So it's going to be a process in play for quite a while. It's going to take probably a couple months to get a lot of these little websites that previously had been available, opened up. By default, most of these are going to be fairly locked down. This one's no different. So some of the resources that as teachers start to come back, they realize, well, this site's been blocked. Those are the things that we're going to work through moving forward. So, and also our learning curve to get accustomed to the product. So that's pretty much where we are now and where we're headed.
Board, any questions for Mike?
No, I'd like to reiterate, I know the endeavor that it took to you know, the effort that it took to get through all of that. It was a very big process, and I commend you on the progress.
I apologize.
Just a couple things, and Paul and I talked about this, but you're going to be, I'm assuming that we're going to try to do some kind of outside testing, just of, you know, people sitting in a room, and I mean, I'm sure you're doing that now.
Yeah, and that also will be an ongoing process, and that's something that we do on a daily basis, because with this implementation, it's going to be a tool we're going to be working with pretty extensively on a daily basis. So that is part of the process.
And then, I mean, I don't know if it's true or not, but I am hearing some noise that some of the folks, it's a little frustrating for some of the folks because they're trying to get to some sites that they can't get to that are, you know, either administrators or whatever. Is that, are we seeing a spike in that from your end, or is it?
I've seen a little bit of that, but the teachers are really just starting to come back now.
Yeah, teachers
come
back.
We'll hear a little bit more of that as we go through this process, and having done this twice previously, the different filters, pretty much the way it goes.
And is there a different level of privilege that you can give, you know, administration and staff versus kids? So.
Right now we have three levels, so for staff, for teachers, and then for students, as well as for the IT staff, and there is an override. But we'll only provide that to a select amount of people that would evaluate sites before we unblock them.
Okay. I just think the success of this will be on how easy it is for not just IT, but, you know, easy for IT, but also IT for, you know, a teacher or a staff member to get what they need, you know, quickly and not be burdened by it. So that's just another part of the
any of the services that we know we use and that certainly we pay to use, mm-hmm. those are the things we're addressing right now to make sure that those are available and are functioning properly. But it's difficult to determine what everybody uses individually. So those are things that will requests that mm-hmm. will have to come to us from the teachers as we go through.
Okay. Great. Again, thanks for all the work this summer too. Appreciate it.
I better wait time this time.
Anybody else?
Quick piece for the board on phase two conversations. You know, we've had discussions around what information does the board need for our next special board meeting regarding facilities. We looked at our previous special board meeting. Can't remember the exact date right off the top of my head. But my team, which includes Jack and Ron from FGC and FGM, Bob, Karen, and Eric, and a number of others, have been reviewing all of the work that we've done in the past. And a number of the things that we will be bringing to you is kindergarten data from homeschooled students, student busing information, type of special educational programming that we would bring back to the district, and the number of students in classrooms this would impact, the impact of full-day kindergarten on each school, a facility usage of each school, how often is every classroom or space at each building being used that's already been completed by our principals and others, and then a further review of land from other entities within the District 41 boundaries or at just outside of that. So those are pieces that we're already gathering for you, but to ensure that we have as effective a board meeting as possible on that facility piece, are there other pieces that the board members would like for us to have present at that meeting? I tried to... If you have a laundry list, it may be easier.
You did a good job. I'm getting about six of my six-item list.
What happened is we got together, right, and based on the conversation we had, sort of started to put a list together. What do we need for this meeting?
Right. I appreciate
it. I didn't want to have the meeting. You know, I felt the last meeting we came to a little different prioritization. Uh-huh. But we'd like to come out of this meeting, especially if we are accelerating, you know, the construction. I'd like to come out of this meeting with, you know, more, less action items to make a decision and more
direction.
You know, decision, not more than direction, but decision, right? So, what else do you?
Here's what I would ask. Yeah. If you don't mind, I don't mind picking on the spot, but
here I go.
But I like your list because I took it all in and I know which ones I've already asked for. So when it was, like I said, most of those, but. I'd like the chance to add to the list if I could.
That's what this is.
I mean, I'm not sure I'm going to come up with something right now. I see your list.
You can always get back to me.
Because we have to refresh what the workshop was. Last summer, right?
Absolutely. And we went through that list as well, our team.
I'm with you because, I mean, that list seems pretty inclusive of everything I was thinking. I think there was part of that list, does that include the examination that your team did on spring? And
correct.
Okay.
That's land usage.
I want to make sure that's in there, but that's included in there. Okay. I feel good with your list sitting here today.
Yeah.
I'm such a...
No, I know you.
I don't want to add to the workload either. I just think that that's...
For this one, that's what I want.
I want to make sure
you guys have everything. I thought what John brought to the last president's meeting is a really good one. To make sure we have everything at the table that you guys need to be able to give further direction to staff. One of the biggest, as we continue to look at this, is full-day kindergarten. That's the game changer.
Well, it adds a lot of classrooms, that's for sure.
It adds a lot of classrooms, and this, the idea, and we're going to, and I'll be introducing Michelle here in a second, but Michelle's thinking around which special education programs to be bringing back into the district that would make the most sense within our district, that would give us a really nice continuum for our students being served in our district. Obviously, we can't bring back all of our students currently, but we can have more programming that allows for a continuum of services that Michelle is getting her arms wrapped around. So we'll have that as well, because that some of those programs are for smaller size classroom or students, the number of students, but still within a regular classroom size because of the equipment that's needed or other material. So those are pieces that are important.
Joe, I'm sorry, just real quick. When Paul and I talked about this, he's saying it politely, but he really needs some direction from us on full-day kindergarten.
Yeah, and here's where I'm at. That's one thing I
And what data do we need to come down to?
This is the thing I look at with full-day kindergarten and what I've heard. And this is the one thing in my 30 seconds of thinking that I want to drill down on that line item is I'd like to see, maybe if this is what you're going to do anyways, there's a full-day kindergarten impact in the global. We serve every student with full-day kindergarten. But some of the discussion, at least what I heard, the bang for your buck kind of statements, on those that, you know, there's a critical group of students who would benefit more from having it and having that as an option. And that doesn't add as many classrooms initially.
Correct.
And maybe that's not the approach to go. But I don't know those numbers.
We will have those numbers for you.
And then there's cost associated. One thing Sam always talked about with full-day kindergarten is this operating end of that. So, and that needs to be at those levels, too. If it's a slight implementation, bam. If it's a full implementation, here it is. I don't know that there's anywhere in between.
There's not.
But you're right. It didn't sound like there was. So it's critical that we look at both those, how it affects the number of classrooms and where it affects on the operations side. There's this other thing, and that's in my mind, that I was going to say with full-day kindergarten. You know, I want to understand what you believe from an academic standpoint, and this is getting on the operations side and the classroom size. Because, you know, and I'm not an academic, obviously, but I've heard and read and been told that at some level, at that point, having bigger classrooms with one teacher and one aide, and I'm thinking this from a cost standpoint, from as you know, if we're going to build schools, classrooms, you need bigger classrooms. If you had 27 students and you had one teacher and one aide in there, they're breaking down to about a 1-13, whatever, 1-14 level, and that's kind of that critical point, at least that I've been told. I would defer to Aaron and the rest of you guys, where you get to that critical point, because right now we're at 1-20. So I look at it from a cost analysis. If suddenly I'm building less rooms, I'm hiring less staff at that higher level because an aide is at a lesser level than a teacher, and I start thinking about these combinations, and does that apply to the students who we want to get first impact to, or does it apply to your average students, if you will? I don't know, maybe you have a mixture of that.
Okay.
So I thought a lot about this, so I'm really thinking this kind of matrix that I have in my head can be put out and saying, yeah, these are the ideas. Because one thing I don't want to do is just go into us approving full-day kindergarten and then this massive increase in classrooms and saying, well, this is it. It's a 20-kid classroom, and that's the best way to do it. I want to hear that that's the best way to do it. That's how we're doing it today with half, with part-time, half-time, barely any time.
Right, 2.5 hours.
Right? Plus when they get there and they need their coats on in the winter, and I found out it's really only 45
minutes.
It's about,
yeah.
So all that said, maybe the classroom size needs to be half. Maybe it needs to be that big. I don't know, but I definitely want to
want that vetted
and understand it, especially from the academic side, because that does affect the facility.
So I don't want to put words in your mouth, Paul, based on our discussion.
Mm-hmm.
I think, Joe, those type of scenarios, assuming full-day kindergarten, is, I think, the direction that Paul's looking for. But that assumes some sort of extra kindergarten activity going on in the district. I think what Paul's trying to avoid is all these scenarios that says do it, don't do it. You know, he's trying to get us to come to the table, not now, not tonight, but to get us to the table next time, say, guys, are we doing this? You're saying, if I'm going to do full-day kindergarten, I'd like to understand different models where maybe it's not all, you know, Big Bang full-day kindergarten, but it's to those that need it most, right?
Right.
That's what he wants us to be able to provide him, so that in the next phase two discussion we have, we can come to some decision on what the next step is.
Well, I'm fine to stair-step it and get that data first so that I'm prepared to give him the feedback and then go to that phase two. But to me, in hearing all this full-day kindergarten, I don't feel like, in my mind, that's been vetted at a level that...
Right, and that's what he wants to hear, so he can go get those.
Understood.
Thank you.
That's
good perspective.
I agree with Joe. If you can give me those numbers, and all-in numbers, you know, salaries,
we will.
TRS, you know, all operating costs associated with it.
Yeah, because if you don't go full-day kindergarten across the board with a new facility, you will have to have an ed referendum on top of it.
Right.
There's no way within our current budget we would be able to offset those costs with current budgeting. So we have two bonds that will be rolling off in 17 and 18. So we'll bring all of that, the economics, to the table, so you understand where we're at, how it matches. But I appreciate your feedback on, are there different ways to do kindergarten that we've seen out there that may be better for the kids academically? You're looking for the best academic solution.
And I don't know if it's the same thing that Joe was talking about, the tiering, but I'm seeing it in my head. If we can't get all day kindergarten for all schools, all students that are eligible, what's your priority?
I appreciate that. And that's something we...
Not second priority outside of kindergarten, but...
Yeah.
What's your plan B?
Plan B
within kindergarten.
I
absolutely understand what you're looking for. So, good. So, if you have further needs prior to that meeting, please send them to me, and we will send that information out prior to the special board meeting, so you guys are ready for that.
And to the... bringing our students back in-house, and then possibly bringing other district students in. We can't make money off that, right, Bob? Is that what you said?
Any of us. Well, the thing you do, though...
We can bring revenue in.
Yeah.
We can't make
money. But it's not a profit.
No.
No. But what you're doing is you're supporting the facilities that you plan to bring to your to the referendum.
There are tuitions that other districts would pay us,
or
just as we pay
the cost of what you're what it
right,
costs.
Right.
You
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah,
because
I mean,
currently,
where it's at.
Absolutely, as John said, currently we pay a significant amount in tuition costs for educating students with special needs outside of our district. We pay significant costs.
And I think that's something that Joe and I touched on.
Yep.
When we were 18 months ago, tell us what that difference is.
Yep.
Bring them in. We're going to save.
And that's what we need to.
It
really is about Erica and her team looking at what are the best programs to bring back to our district, because each one is very different and very unique, and each one adds a certain layer of cost that that one or the other don't bring. So.
You mean Michelle.
Yeah, thank you.
Did I say?
Well,
Eric, you can do that too, can't you? Michelle has way too much on her plate. You start taking off.
So now Erica doesn't anymore. Oh, that was good to hear.
So thank you for correcting me on that.
No problem.
All right. Yeah, I guess I'll give you.
Yeah, just give me feedback.
So, and I think, so we're targeting to have this conversation September-ish?
September-ish, when I, you know, it's always a challenge to find.
So let's...
8 or 9 people with...
Let's try to get the request, if there are any more, in, right, as soon as possible. And then based on that, we'll determine if September is doable or not doable. That's the target time, sir. So as you're making your request... please... please keep in mind that we're trying to have this sometime in September.
All right.
And that my assumption is it will be a special meeting.
Yeah, there's no way.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah. So, thank you. Just a quick piece on GERC, which is the GECRC, the Glen Ellen Community Resource Center. They're already partnering with Lincoln and doing an amazing job with tutoring after school, bringing in... students, parents, other members of the community to work directly with our kids. We're in the process of trying to create that same thing over at Churchill. Scott, myself, the team from GECRC have been working to fill out a federal grant to be able to bring something very similar to Churchill, which would be of great benefit. So we'll see in the coming months if that grant is approved for us.
What's the dollar amount of the grant?
About $125,000.
And is it ongoing, or is it...
It would be a 5-year grant for us. And the nice piece about this one right now, there's no step down. Many grants have early step down, so for you to be picking it up. But that's not what this piece is. And then we also have some really nice tie-ins to the program that we think would make great benefit. Churchill has a Learning Together program that we've tied into this. Very academic based, very research based, to support our kids after school.
Great.
Yeah, so I'll keep you updated, but it's going to take a little bit of time on that one for us to hear back from. And tonight I'd like to introduce the two individuals who I've been talking about. It's almost like you all know them already. Erica and Michelle. Erica is our chief communications officer, who's been with us since July. Really,
is that all?
I know. She's really made an impact on day one. Looking at the role differently, with the community engagement, trying to find different avenues to be able to, one, get me out a little bit more, having conversations with community, the community lesson. Listening sessions was a fantastic example of that Erica spearheaded for us. Real pleased with that, but I'm going to hand it over to her to just give us a brief background. Who are you?
Sure.
And what are you up to?
But I'm just really, really happy to be here. And just quickly and informally, I'll just share a little bit of how my journey that kind of brought me back to Glen Ellen. And for 14 years, I worked at Northeastern Illinois University as the chief communications officer, something with a title related to that, in the role of working with the president and doing very much like what I'm going to be doing here with Paul, being a partner and communicating with everyone. But in addition to the communication piece of it, it's really more about engagement and looking for more and more authentic relationships with the community and really being that bridge between, you know, what's happening in the schools and in the community and how you're feeling with the district's office. And so you'll be seeing me a lot. I hope I've already met some of you 4 or 5 times, had coffee with some of you. So I'm really, really interested in connecting with all of you and the board as well. So when I heard that the university president was retiring first, I was a little stressed. I had worked with her for a long time, and I was sitting with a glass of wine with my husband, and I opened up my laptop, and I said, you know, I've been here a long time. Maybe I need to kind of just look to see what else is out there. And in that moment, I opened up my computer, and I see Glen Ellen. I'm like, I graduated from Glen Ellen West. Okay, that's communications. I look. And all of a sudden, my husband said, well, that job is, like, made for you. You need to apply for it. And it was a little fast and furious, but I did. And not expecting to kind of be where I am with you here today. It all happened very fast. But I absolutely fell in love with everyone here.
and in this community already. I have so many connections already. I went to the Chamber of Commerce meetings, and I see friends and parents of my friends from school, and everyone's been so incredibly welcoming, the board and the office and all the schools and the principals, and especially you guys. I mean, I feel like I'm already connecting with a lot of you. So you're going to see a lot of different types of communication, I think, although I don't know really what was happening before. But I'm really focused on telling the story of our students and our awesome teachers, because that's what I'm hearing the loudest from many of you, that our teachers are just absolutely amazing. So I can't wait until they're back and I can meet more and more of them. But you'll be seeing stories about their accomplishments and what we're doing on our website. I'd like to bring a new redeveloped website to the district. I think there's some support for that, doing some social media engagement, which is new, very new to the district. A lot of districts are doing it. So I'll be asking for your help and probably engaging you in some listening type sessions, whatever we decide to call them, to talk about how we might do that and where you're communicating. So I can be in your circle and so I can understand what's going on and communicate that back to the district. And so I just can't tell you how absolutely excited I am to be here and continue to work with all of you on the board. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. I've been here for 1 month. I feel like it's been a year already in a lot of ways, but I have a ton to learn, and I'm looking forward to learning from all of you. So.
Thank you. Thanks. So just one comment. You know, Erica and I have talked, and you know, obviously appreciate you working and stepping into the listening tour like that. But I think one of the things that was an interesting perspective from her was that, you know, when she was looking through all our website and our content and our things like that, I think you said there were two things that kind of made you, brought some concern to you about where we were. And one is there's really not much about the students. So I think that'll be a very interesting perspective to start sharing that and engaging the community more in that. And just some easier ways to find things on the website that you've seen and how that works. So appreciate your initial 30-day feedback.
Sure. Thank you. Yes, and I do have plans. I have a 30, 60, and 90-day plan that I'm sharing with Paul and the rest of the group, and it includes a lot of planning. Big on planning, so I will be looking for feedback on various plans and engaging everyone. And I'm so thankful for this opportunity with the technology piece, because although they're difficult conversations, I have been able to meet a lot of people to understand a lot of different perspectives, and it's been actually kind of a nice jumping into the district, and it's been really nice. And all of the conversations, I have to tell you, I was thinking about putting this in a letter to the community. It is absolutely refreshing to be somewhere that every conversation has focused around the success of students. And you don't find that in a lot of places. And we didn't always do that where I was before. We got caught up in a lot of the administration stuff, and there wasn't that circling back to, is this what's best for students? And I've been here a month. I know it hasn't been a long time, but I have not sat at a table where it did not come back to the students. And so I feel like I'm in the right place.
All right. Welcome aboard. Next, I'd like to introduce Michelle Gallo. Michelle has been an amazing asset already to us. Great, just a great thinker who has an amazing background with behavior, understanding the behavior aspect of students and alike. I cannot tell you, every time I'm in a meeting with her, just blown away with the thoughtfulness, the planning, the integrity she brings to each and every conversation. I could not be more pleased to introduce Michelle Gallo as our new Director of Student Support Services. So, Michelle.
Thank you. I'll just give you a brief summary of my professional experiences. I started out as a special ed teacher. I have both elementary and middle school special ed teaching experience. And then from there, I moved down to administration, and I both was an assistant principal at both the elementary and middle school levels. And then I was an elementary principal, went on to be an assistant director of special education, and then a year as a director of special education. So a lot of good experiences that I think have prepared me well for Glen Ellyn. I have had been here a month also, and I think this is a wonderful, I know this is a wonderful community. I really enjoy getting to know the staff. I'm really excited for school to start to get to know the students. I'm very excited about working in a smaller district. I think that brings a lot of unique opportunities for me as a professional that I think will allow me to even have a better impact on our student learning. I'm really looking forward to meeting your children and working with the teachers. So thank you very much for this opportunity. And I can't wait for school to start.
All right.
So
thank you.
Welcome. All right, with that, I hand it back over to you for board reports.
Okay, board reports. Anybody? Besides the listening tours, I guess.
Yeah, we can probably go over that. I think we've done that pretty well.
Anybody else? Finance?
Pretty much the things that we talked about, we're also discussed at the board meeting. We talked about the financial condition report for qualified institutions, the post compliance that we voted for as well. The one thing that we did talk about that was not on this report was a recommendation from our directors of buildings and grounds in terms of maintenance and inspection of our buildings and heavy equipment, which was a well done report. This was an issue that was raised by Joe and Patrick, and essentially we're having the administration document inspection of equipment on specific headlights.
Okay, great. Anybody else? All right, moving on to discussion items. Sorry. First discussion item was the public participation at board meetings.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, to kind of summarize the feedback that was presented. I mean, there were, you know, obviously seemed to be, I don't want to be biased here, right, but there seemed to be a level of agreement. There was some more specificity around, you know, some of the slides that were put together in terms of, you know, the president will do this or someone else will do this. There was still some concern about, there's some concern about the length of time that this might or might not create, some concern about whether it gets out of control. I don't know if there's anything you guys want to speak about in terms of the public participation. Ideally, you know, I'd like to get a gauge of if we're willing to move forward that way or not, so that we can vote on it in the next meeting. I guess it'd be the next meeting, right?
Yes. Yeah. Did we discuss?
Well, we.
Maureen, is this a vote or a discussion?
It's a discussion.
Remembering what step we're in.
It's the second time, so it's a discussion.
So we have
blending
to
together. Okay.
And this won't actually be a board policy that we'll add to the policy. It's just going to be how we manage ourselves, right?
Right.
Correct.
Yeah, and I think you brought up something that we probably all felt, and I thought you gave it a good framework for saying that we need to change the way we engage. So I'd agree that I think we have that. My concern, and you've already touched on it, is the length of these meetings. And what I would like to see is, in association with doing that, that we would, I don't think it's unreasonable to say that the meeting should go from 7:30 to 9:30 or whatever, you know, we should talk about that, and then maybe from 9:30 to 10 it allows us a closed session. What I think we're lacking is a good timetable in the agenda, and I don't think we've ever done this as a board, where we could say from this to this, to this, to this, to kind of allow you or others to manage the meeting to say, okay, we're running into a problem here. We may have to carry this over to another meeting, but let's move on to the next item. because people do come to the meetings, and more people might come to the meetings if they didn't think that they were going to be here till 11 o'clock or 1 o'clock, as we've been sometimes, to be able to participate or hear what they came for. So I think if we could get it down to a timetable that we could agree on, and then keep track of that time and hold ourselves accountable to it. So we don't, you know, maybe it happens once or twice, but sometimes we ramble on. So, you know, to hold us in check and say, we have to summarize this in the next 2 or 3 minutes here to move on to the next item on there, I think would probably be a healthy thing. But I don't know what the rest of you feel on that. So that would be what I would like to see in conjunction with allowing more. Oh, and the other part that I think may be happening anyway is I believe we need, I've attended all 5 listening tours that we've done so far. I think there's been 5.
Yes.
And I think in addition to board meetings, that would be a little more healthy too, to have some sort of a regular additional meeting, be it on a different night or on a Saturday or something, where we could have board members and administrators there, not all of us maybe, but groups of people there who people could bring in ideas and we could talk about them, we could exchange ideas and go back and forth a little bit more and make that sort of more like a town hall as opposed to trying to do. I think if we introduce a town hall concept to the business meeting, we could be here forever.
Yeah, I think we discussed before, we used to do kind of a listening tour before the meeting, like a half hour, and have a board member there. We could certainly formalize a monthly, quarterly, whatever
mm-hmm.
type of just, you know, board availability, administration availability,
yeah.
and have a discussion.
So,
but back to
just jump into that, because
yeah.
I think it is important that you separate community engagement
right.
from board work and not try to make them all in one.
Mm-hmm.
So one of those pieces that we heard at the first community sessions were, community does want a little bit more time with town hall type of meetings. Some members in that first community session really were saying, you know, we would like this. We would like to have a kind of a conversation with the superintendent and some board members.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the communications that will hopefully go out tomorrow or Wednesday or maybe Thursday will be announcing our first of many town hall meetings that we're excited to be holding. Because we do see them, the board meeting and community engagement, I think, do need to be separated a little bit so board can do their work. There is work to be done here, but there is another obligation on our part to engage community in a different way, because the community sessions have been a success. I mean, with 65 people out, people are talking. We've got to keep that going. We have to keep that piece going. So that was my piece. Sorry to interrupt.
Push on that a little bit.
Yeah.
Because I'm trying to marry what you said against kind of some of this that we want to do here. Shouldn't the community engagement help facilitate a more informed board, so the public participation and everything that we're having here, the give and take? I think you offered like 2 or 3 opportunities for participation. You said it needs to be separated from board work.
That's administrative. That's Paul's opinion of this, of looking at, because others said, you know, what's best practice? Best practice in board is to treat it as work. Have a opening public comment. If you so choose to have a second one, have a second one. But the piece that I think we've been missing is that other community engagement. Because without that, then John's absolutely right. You've got to do something. If you're not going to
mm-hmm.
go out and you're not going to reach out, you've got to have another avenue. And what I thought John was trying to do is say, okay, without the community engagement piece, I'm going to try to bring it all into this one. I think we've got to separate them. I think, again, that's my own, as Paul said here, a superintendent, not somebody who makes these decisions. But I am already committed to doing town hall meetings. That's something that I'll be bringing forward that I believe a number of board members would be willing to join me.
Can I put a little context to that? So, you know, when we talked, I think this is where Erica and her role, right, as communications can start to play a role to more consistently allow us to do that, right? So to Paul's point, a way to engage the community through this public participation is one piece. But I personally don't feel that, you know, whether we do this quarterly or monthly or however we do it, I don't feel that that gets to some of the other issues that I was trying to address with this, which is, you know, to me a big part of it is, you know, and I forget what all my bullet points were, see, you guys put my slides up, but, you know, essentially it's, you know, either you got to show up at 7:30 or you kind of miss your time to talk, or you got to wait all the way to the end to these meetings that you guys say already go too long, or you miss your chance to talk. So I got to believe, maybe I'm wrong, that people are sitting there going, I'm going to try to get there, and based on their life and schedules, they can't always get there, and then they're either, you know, I can't wait that long, I got to get home, you know, I'll leave my kids. So
yeah,
that was point one. So just to provide a little more flexibility. Point two was to be able to allow the presenters to present the content. I felt sometimes we start public participation and people are trying to get in their points before they've heard where we're at. So I felt that that would maybe actually reduce some of that up front, you know, because some of that up front, you know, and I won't use a 41 example, but there's an example going on right now at the high school around these kids and what happened. And, you know, there are so many facts that are right, so many that are not facts. And so people are commenting based on that. So I thought it was a better way to get that out. You know, make sure that the presenters spoke, then let the public provide comment, right? It's not a resolution. It's provide comment. Let's get their input. So it's a way to listen, right? And then the board gets to speak.
Here's a question. Just when you do this, you have an action item that you're going to vote on. And if you, for your scenario to work, the presenter would present, then the public would speak about that issue.
They would comment.
They would comment, speak. And then we would discuss, and then we'd vote. And then you'd have your next item up for vote. The presenter would present, and then the public would speak, and then we would vote. So I'm trying to follow you here, because what happened, what you said is right. At the beginning, they're commenting, but there's new things happening here, so it kind of gets to the point, well, maybe their comments aren't as pertinent, and that's not fair to them. And if they wait to the end, two things occur. They're here till at least 9:35, perhaps later, and the votes already occurred. So I can see where the issue is, but I don't necessarily see the solution that every time before we vote, we say, who's got a green card on that item? And then do you just take everybody to one green card for one item, or do they get to speak on all six items we may be voting on? And I think that's what's critical here for Erica. It's like, these things need to get vetted at these listening tours and these town halls, and that's the proper place for them to occur, it seems, so that when we're taking a vote, like we did on the policy, we had three opportunities to go to. Maybe like Dean, you go to all three, or you go to two like I did, or I think you went to one, and we get some feedback. But to do it at every vote goes to what Paul says. Now we're losing, I mean, when you have a business meeting and a business agenda, what Dean says is correct. I mean, whoever's monitoring it, be it the president or be it, you know, whoever's the project head at a company, they have a timeline set. And they have to snap people because people have other meetings to go to, or your business falls apart. So I like Dean's idea. I'm trying to grapple where you have a great idea about getting this input mid-meeting, but when do you get it? You want it before you vote. You want it after the presentations. It's almost like you have to do all the presentations first.
Well, no. That
then let them talk, and then let us talk, and then do all the voting at the end.
No,
that
probably
cures it.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, you're operationalizing this, which is good, because it's a way to think through it,
yeah,
which is good, right? So, I would say, you know, if we're talking about, let's just say we have, you know, the security policy that we're going to talk about, right? So there's a presentation given on it, and then the public provides their comments, and then we provide ours, and that's when something's in that. Is that what we call the second, or the first, or the second one?
The first discussion or the second discussion?
Yeah, that was going to be my question.
Yeah.
The first discussion, the second discussion, or the vote? Or all three?
So, to me, it's clearly items. The first and second discussion.
But you have multiple items.
Well, no, you do it after each one.
More like I said.
Yeah.
But that seems operationally...
Well, I think we might be able to do it. If it will, one, go back to what you said in the beginning. I like what you said about that people can't get here for the whole meeting. So if they knew, well, the board was going to talk about this issue between 7:30 and 8.
Well, that goes to you.
They could... Well, yeah, but that's also his point. That
right.
They wouldn't have to be here for the whole meeting.
Right.
They could say, I can't get here at 7:30, but the part I want to hear is 8 to 8:30.
Right.
So one is, if you put a time frame on it, it's good. We need to be succinct in the comments. We need to hold the public to be succinct in the comments.
Correct.
And we need to be succinct in the presentations. We need to get better at the presentations. We need to shorten them up, more meat, don't need to read slides to us, put up the points, have a discussion, and maybe you have 15 minutes or whatever you have for it. We get through it, and I think we can do what you're suggesting, John, to be able to say, do the presentation. We got 15 minutes for that, 5 minutes for public comments, so we're going to allow a couple of people to comment. First one's get your sheet in, get the comment. Then the board's going to talk about it. Then we're going to vote. We're going to move on, because if we don't do that and we just allow public comment, then we will have a town hall on every issue and we will never get through anything on our board.
We've
got to limit that.
There's
board meetings
This is a good example.
Kirk,
you're right.
I can't take.
But a board meeting is a board meeting. It's a business meeting. We need to get comments from people, and we can allow that in the beginning, which we do, and at the end. But if we want to have deeper conversations, I think we have to do it outside the board meeting at other sessions and bring it back, or else we'll be here forever.
And then you're asking to come to another meeting.
And yes. And quite frankly, we're volunteering to be at another.
I'd rather stay here until 11:30 than come to another meeting.
I wouldn't either.
But you know what, guys?
Can I ask a question?
One of your points, this is a business meeting, right? And some of the business is sort of, you know, consent agenda, whatever, get that stuff done.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
But essentially, this is a business meeting of the business of the people who have their kids in our schools. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's not us necessarily. There are things we do because we have to administratively to get through them.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a business meeting, and I know we use the term business meeting, but it's a meeting of the people and what it is we're trying to do that will
No one disagrees with you there.
Right?
We're all in violent agreement. We're saying we've got to put a time frame on it.
And here's the thing I wonder about. One question for you, Dino, is if we have an 8 to 8:30 item and we get there and we're done earlier on, that person is going to come to 8:30. Maybe we can move our closed session to that point. I'm just thinking through this because, if the baseball game starts at 8, it starts at 8. No one, or the plane leaves at 8, it leaves at 8.
Well, it depends on what the objective is.
Yeah,
the objective is to be able to allow people to come to different parts of the meeting. We should stick to not starting that, like we just did tonight.
Right.
So we got to delay it.
We could fill it.
It when we
as long as we have the flexibility to fill those gap areas with other items, like a closed session or something,
sure.
I think it's fine. I don't want to sit there and be held into something and then have somebody show up at 8:15 when it says 8:15, which,
the
plane's taken off.
No, I mean, we play that by ear. I mean, we've... You know, we had people walk in sometimes a little late, and when Sam wasn't here, and I asked,
I like that.
And that was okay. So
no, that was
maybe the way to box this in a little bit till we get more comfortable with it is maybe we just do it on the first and second reading, but not on the final vote. Maybe we start there, and if we decide, hey, let's get comfortable with that. So, because the whole intent of this really is to understand people's comments. That's what it's about. It's not about trying to solution something or get a decision based on the conversation. It's understanding the comment and the input.
Well, what I like about it is you're getting more of a... You're trying to create a conversation where we're not really supposed to be in a conversation, where there's questions and they want feedback. And we can give them feedback in that discussion immediately.
Yeah.
So that's the good thing about your idea here. And that engages better and makes people... If I'm in that audience, and I was in that audience before as an observer before being on the board, and you could sense frustration when you're in those chairs, where it's like, I'm not getting my turn. You know, there wasn't this little conversation here. So I like that you're putting one, then another presentation, then the comments, and then our discussion, which would be right on the heels of those comments, and then our vote. You know, quite frankly, I think it's better to have it in the vote than have it once. is we get emails, we get a lot of other stuff, they can use the beginning comments. The vote's the most important time, but maybe you're not going to influence anybody at that time.
I think people might think it's too late at that point.
Yeah, you might, because people say you made up your mind, you're not ready to change your vote. But you should always be open-minded, so I just think that's a very myopic.
And the go back to what you said about there's really objective one in that initial public participation is something that's not on the agenda that we can just catalog, assign, and get answers to.
Uh-huh.
Right? So that it's done.
Well, that would shorten it up.
So that's the part of part one, right? So part one, in today's meeting, we wouldn't have got public participation on our policy, for example.
Right.
We wouldn't have gotten that because it's on the agenda. But then once we heard the presentation...
I don't think you would have today because we were voting. So I would think that
don't get that.
But let's get technical. I mean, we're talking about changing our meeting.
We're going to have to, so we can administer it.
Let me put a
structure together that I'm
going at it because what you're talking about is probably adding a half an hour to each meeting, which is fine. And we all volunteered for this, and so we might as well.
Well, one of the things we all told you is these meetings go late at night. Right. I
sat through about six of them before I decided to go.
They go late at night.
They didn't go late at night.
We all did volunteer for that. What's not fair is to hold public participation until 11 o'clock at night. That's ridiculous to expect other people who didn't volunteer for that for this.
Right.
All I'm asking is that we time box things so we know when we're going to talk about them. And then if it goes over, we put it on the next agenda. We don't say we can't talk about it. There's obviously still more. Do we all agree that we should put this on the next agenda? We'll hear more. Maybe this is something that should go to a town hall and we need to get even more feedback from people. I think it allows us to do that. What I'd like to see is us manage the meeting.
I agree.
Because we have administrators that stay here that got to work this morning at 8 o'clock and they're going to get home maybe at 10, maybe at 11, maybe at 12, maybe at 1. And I don't think it's fair. Ask people to do that in their job. And I think we could be better at the way we manage the meetings. We might need to dumb down how many things we handle in a specific meeting and start pushing them out more.
One thing I'd like to add, though, thinking through this, if there's an item that we need to pass because we feel the time is critical, mm-hmm. I'd hate to have that boxed in. I'd rather go to one of the items that's later in the meeting and say, that's the one due to our time constraint that's falling to the next meeting. I just want to have that flexibility. That's normal in business. Mm-hmm. I mean, we write agendas at my company that are too long, and you take the last four that don't really matter. They can get pushed off, and you push them off. I hate to say that something doesn't matter, but it's like what we've talked about in finance. What are the priorities?
But that's what we do in the president's meeting.
Yeah, and right? Sometimes you don't
try,
get it perfect.
We try to at least the two that I put here. We try to put something on the agenda that we think we can get done.
Yeah.
And then we talk about should we have a special meeting in the event that we think we've got other things that we need to get done that don't have the time to get done.
One of the pieces that Dean said that I think should be repeated. I think we would be better served, again, just from my perspective, is if we're a little more tightly facilitating each other.
Yes.
Not so much the community, whatever the rules you guys put there, but that I'm more than happy to facilitate, but you don't want me facilitating the president's role.
I'm more than happy to do it, but have to agree that when we say, okay, Joe, thank you, or, you know.
Totally agree. I just,
you guys got to move on, and it can't be this, wait a minute, let me finish. I got two other points. I mean, I think board members should be able to speak what they want to speak and get their points out. I mean, I personally have a problem with this. I don't mind facilitating a cleaner meeting, but to say that it should be a 2-hour meeting just depends what we're dealing with and how long, what people's comments are.
But that's what we do when we build an agenda. We say we don't have time for that on this role. We have to move that to the next.
Well, you know what? I don't think we are, at least I'm new to this role. We haven't put an agenda to say, can we get this done in 2 hours?
I've never looked at it like that. Right. So I think
that's what I'm saying. Yeah. It might be a good idea. Or maybe it's 2.5.
Yeah.
Whatever it is,
I mean,
that we just start to apply that so that if people want to come to the meeting, they know that there's going to be a time when their topic's going to be discussed, that they'll have the ability to input. I like what you said about the input, about how to make it more relative to what's going on at that time, as opposed to in the beginning or all the way at the end. But I think we've got to, there are some people
who will come to every meeting and sit here for the whole time. There are a lot more who go, I was at one of those meetings, it went on forever, I'm never going back. So we've driven those people out of here, but they'll come to listening sessions where we start to pull them into that. And I think there are certain topics that are going to lend themselves to getting a lot more information from the community. And there's certain topics that we vote on and we don't even talk
about. So Paul and I can look at agendas that are, you know, that meet the two-hour requirement. Mm-hmm. Back to this, though. Are we willing to, you know, give this a try and pilot it on the first two discussions and see where we go?
The first two and then not on the vote? Is that what we're saying?
Right on the vote, it would be the initial public participation would be provide your comments there. And we have our meeting on the votes. Let's start there, and then we'll have the public participation at the end.
So today, what discussion items did we have? We had all voted.
Well, we.
This is the only discussion.
This would have been one of them.
This is where we now open it up to the community.
Well, no, we would open it up prior.
Prior to our discussion, you'd have to give your presentation.
In the last example, I would have given the presentation.
Right.
Comments from the public. They comment. And then you guys come.
Well, I guess then the key thing there is that the presentation needs to be put on the board book so that they can review it. Like that last time, that didn't happen, so they wouldn't have known what anything was about. Their comments wouldn't, they'd be, comparing.
Most times everything gets on.
So the goal would be to make sure anything that's presented, that the audience, that the public has the ability to review so that they can come here prepared, which is the only right thing to do for them. Presentation given, then they say their remarks and limited to 3 minutes. I mean, you said 3 to 5, there was a discussion in here.
The idea on the initial participation, I did have 3 to 5, right? Because it's not agenda stuff. And then
so
on
that's the beginning one, okay.
And then on the other ones, it would be provide us your comments, right? So you're asking people to stand up. 30 seconds, give me your comment. Hey, I really like, tonight it might have been, hey, I really like the acceleration of what you're trying to do to Churchill and Franklin, but, please make sure you get Ben Franklin and Lincoln done correctly and you're not stretching your resources by doing it. Thank you, appreciate that comment. Someone else might have made another comment. Comment to help us understand what we're doing.
So are we, just so the community knows, are you framing that within a time, 30 seconds, a minute?
Yeah. I think
we
could start
it's
there.
It's important that we have those postures.
Folks may not stand up and
I'm going to go back to say that if you're not giving, on the first reading of the tech policy, you wanted more than 3 minutes. So, there's audience members that want more than 3 minutes. So a quick comment on that, I don't know. It seems like they need at least 3 minutes.
I'm happy to give them 3 minutes.
I don't see how you don't. It seems that most of the people are going over 3 minutes on your clock. So
done.
I think you have to give them 3 minutes.
That's fine.
Because it's the early comments that will be last. Those are the ones that are going to be pretty much evaporated with this new style, this new format, I should call it.
But I still think we have to have some consistency around how much time we're going, because some people will go 10, 15, 20 minutes, some will go 20 seconds,
and I think
we
need to.
I just want some consistency so I can help.
Here's a problem with this. Let's say we want to get through 3 items today, and we've allowed half an hour, 45 minutes for each one of the 3 items. And one of the items happens to be something like the technology. We start to get into that, and instead of having 3 people with 3 minutes apiece, we all of a sudden have 15 people with 3 minutes apiece. So that's 45 minutes. That's a pretty good indication. We ought to slow down a little bit and have a meeting on this to let the people talk, because they're telling us there's a lot of interest in this. And to jam it through a board meeting when the other people in the community don't understand that's what's going to happen tonight.
Well, and that might be where Paul and I say, let's not put that on the business meeting agenda. Let's put it on the
listening tour. And that's what I mean. We can move things off to that to say, look, we want to get some more input. Mm-hmm. So let's put that there. What I don't think is a good policy is to let, if we say something's going to be at 9, to be talking about it at 11. I think people have kids that get up in the morning, have to go to school, they got to get them ready. It's going to make for a very short night as it is. They haven't signed up for this like we have.
and I think that we're not respecting the public, and I think we're not respecting
You know, guys, we've discussed this before, right? That we could take the sort of business of the board, such as the consent agenda and stuff like that, that's more perfunctory, just put it in the back and just go straight to, you know, let's go to our discussion items. I mean, that's another option, right? We could look at that.
Well, here's a question.
I want to answer you.
You confused me on one thing, though.
I want to answer
you. Can you ask a second one, too? Because you brought up Jack's presentation, but that's not a voting thing. So your goal was to have it on the discussion items where we eventually vote. Jack's was just an update. So that one no one would comment on, right? Or are they commenting on that in your idea here, too? Because that's in presentations, but it's not a voting item.
Yeah, it's not anything we're voting on, but at some point we did vote on it. So.
Well, they wouldn't come back. I mean, the goal isn't that they come back.
Bits.
So really, you would mean more on something like this item of today's agenda. I just want to make sure I understand.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead and answer my question.
Well, just, you know, on the last meeting, right? So I think you and I talked about this over the phone, Joe, or at least, you know, the last meeting where I had the slides, if I had had no slides and just talked about it, I mean, I don't think you have to have slides in that first one to talk about it. So, yes, if you can, you get them up there and they're out there for the community to read. But, you know, if the last time we talked about public participation, I had just gotten up and said, hey, guys, you know, I think we ought to have an initial public participation on the first one and all that, it's just easy for me to put it on slides just to communicate, right? So, you know, I don't think that somebody has to come with a quote unquote set of slides or that first time where they want to talk about it. That's all.
I think what we do need though is to be able to have a topic on the agenda.
So the last time it was on the agenda.
It was a topic.
And
but in respect of all seven of us, when the other two are here, is that if you want to have a better conversation on that, I know I would prepare everybody. Because I could bring it up, and it'll probably take three meetings then, because people are going to have a lot of questions they're going to ask, and then there's going to be a lot more afterwards. So the more preparation you can do to get the board ready in those board packets, the better off everybody is, because we have the time to be able to read it, think about it, and come prepared.
If that's what we want to do, is bring things on the agenda and not have anything prepared for us to read, you know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, or whatever, I think we have to say that item is almost out of bounds in terms of following the three-step rule.
Okay.
It has to. We got to have at least another formalized deck presentation or whatever to it.
I just respectfully disagree with that, John. I think you need to do, and we talked about that, the presentation prior. I mean, we all have lots we're doing, and you can always hold off one meeting like this meeting. So. I understand your point, though. Thank you.
Okay, so am I hearing that? Do I need to?
We need to start from the very beginning. When we come in public comment, what is that? I'm understanding that piece to be
non-board agenda items
only.
Yep.
Still at 3 minutes. There will be an opportunity to try to respond to community members if. There's an appropriate answer.
Which I think John has been doing a better job of since I've been here of engaging with that.
Or assigning.
Yeah.
So that a community member here, when they leave, they know that someone's assigned to respond.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And then just to skip to the next meeting, that list is there to make sure that we responded to it. Right.
Okay.
And then.
So going to our next public comment would be on a voting item only, or just any presentation.
First and second discussion.
But not updates.
Okay, thank you.
No one's going to be commenting on your board reports.
No updates. Everyone,
just good. And to that, what's the community time limit?
Yeah.
You said 30 seconds, 1 minute, 3 minutes, five minutes?
I suggested three. John jumped at my suggestion.
I'll take it.
Okay. So 3 minutes?
3 minutes
per?
Open.
Or is that piece? Because there was one time that you
I think in my presentation I said we would time box that to like 15 minutes.
Yeah.
so you could divide it up amongst everybody. You can hand out more time to somebody else, whatever that may be. But I kind of like that box a little bit better than a wide open box. But
I forget what I put in the
box. I thought you said 10 to 15.
I will say this. I think you're going to have to provide the flexibility based on the topic.
And that was in there, is that, you know, that there would be, and I think that's where Patrick provided more clarity, right? That, you know, we can extend that if we feel that we need to. And we've done that in the past, right? I mean, we did that with Think Tank, right, where we said we're going to extend this for an hour or whatever. So we've done that, too.
Mm-hmm. But that would be a board decision to say we're going to go beyond the 10 minutes that we've allocated for this. Board, so you're good, and you move forward.
Here was my comments. Your bullet point was limited to a total of 10 minutes, and participants will be asked to provide their comments succinctly and not repeat what was previously stated. My question was, are you asking the audience to self-regulate themselves, i.e., I'm going to be speaking my 3 minutes, I'm going to go 4 minutes, 5 minutes, somebody else in the audience is going to say, hey, my turn, sit down, because we only have 10 minutes to this.
Good point.
How we go?
Well, they're still going to turn in sheets, right?
Well, they're still going to turn sheets, but if we limit it to 10 minutes, 12 minutes, 15 minutes, and we have people that want to speak in 3 minutes and then an additional 3 minutes, 4 minutes, 5 minutes, are we regulating that audience participation, or is the audience regulating that participation?
No, it's our meeting and we're going to regulate.
I think we have to regulate it.
We're going to regulate the speakers.
So if I got 10 green forms
are
in that time, then I'll, you know, say, guys, you know, let's make sure we're not repeating our points. So I'll pick on Angel and ask her not to talk about whitelisting, because we covered it. And, you know.
So how you'll manage it, though, is
Angel will come up with a better way to talk about it.
The green sheets will be turned in. Maureen would turn and say, okay, everybody has 45 seconds, 2 minutes, or 4 minutes, because there's only, you know, whatever amount of people. That's how you would regulate it.
Yeah, it's either that or if there are 10 sheets and it's a huge topic, we're just going to say, we'll extend it to 20 minutes, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think you're being very open.
Let's give it a shot.
I think you're doing a great job by the community.
Let's give it a shot.
Let's try it. Let's evaluate.
I don't know where we go.
What do we got to lose?
3 minutes.
3 minutes?
We're going to count the sheets, though. It sounds like if we have 10 sheets, we might go to 30 minutes. I think you let it fly and then you reevaluate it. Get the audience feedback.
Okay.
Yeah. So what else are we?
So I think
first, seconds,
and
first and
my
second.
My part is still to have an agenda when you guys meet in your presence, when you put together an agenda to put some timer on.
Right. So the other thing is on the agenda is we'll time box.
Okay.
And guys, just a little history, I think, and I don't know, maybe Maureen will correct me on this, but, you know, we used to meet every Monday, so that they would be shorter meetings, because we had a lot to do, especially when you talk about facilities and other stuff. But then we went to every other Monday and had them longer. So just keep that in mind. We'll try the 2 hours, but, you know, just keep that in mind that it could mean that you're meeting more often.
I think it actually went the other way. It only went from one meeting a month to two meetings a month, is what I'm reading from my historian back here.
And I don't have another school board that meets every Monday.
Started,
there might be
one meeting a month.
No, when I was with Jack.
Jack was two meetings.
Yeah, but it seemed like we were meeting every
month. We had a lot of special meetings.
Same too.
So,
and I don't know if a board, and maybe I'm wrong, and there's probably one out there. Most board members I talk to, when we talk at gatherings that we're at ISB and stuff and bring up our board meetings, they go, what do you mean you're there at 11 o'clock or 1 o'clock? We end on time.
So
he says, how do people attend your meeting if you don't end that time?
That's because last call in those communities are attempted.
So, so what you're saying is that I'm going to walk through this
please,
this meeting. You're going to have first discussion is
last call.
8 to 8:30 is your first topic. 8 to 8:30. You go through it. Your 8:20's presentation's over. Maureen says, hey, I have 15 sheets. I have 20 sheets. The next topic starts at 8:30. What are you doing?
I was trying to get practical before, so I'm sorry.
Let's give it a shot and see what happens. So we might limit it and say, hey, look, we've got a lot of people to talk tonight. Let's be real careful not to repeat. why don't we try to bring it down? Instead of giving you normal 3 minutes, since there's 20 of you, we're going to give you a minute apiece.
Okay.
Be quick. Get to your point. Do it a minute apiece.
Okay.
We'll try
and if someone just said it, it isn't like a voting where if we hear it eight times, it holds more weight. Give us the idea. If you give us the idea, we'll weigh the idea.
Okay.
It doesn't need to. If it comes five times from only five people at this meeting, it doesn't represent the entire community. It represents the five people who showed up at the meeting.
Okay.
And if it, you know, if it backfires on us, then we'll
change. Let's give it a shot, though.
So closing.
Yeah. Yeah,
I just
want
to make sure what are we doing?
Discussion items.
Discussion items after first and second discussion items.
Are we having? Are we?
I don't
yes.
know.
We have a
we're just talking.
Yeah.
We have a closing one for those that want to stick around.
Okay, so we're same format as current.
And same, they can talk about anything you want, including
what we
including
just
discussion.
Talked about.
Yep. Okay.
So first and second discussion items, voting items, presentations. Sorry, Jack. There's a lot there. Right?
Yeah.
And then.
The closing.
Oh, I'm. We're putting presentations with Jack and Lori.
Yeah, yeah.
Those are updates. We're not.
We gotta let those go.
We're paying Jack. You know,
so yeah. we'll Pledge of Allegiance, comments, presentations, first and second discussion items, mm-hmm. voting items, perfunctory items,
and then closing statements.
Uh-huh. And no one's gonna be here when I pull another item from the consent agenda.
There you go.
I'll be there.
All right. We'll all be here for you.
So you right, don't guys. Need to vote on this.
Huh?
You just
this
is what we're doing.
Shot. You guys put together
so,
the agenda.
Let's do it.
Put time boxes.
Yeah,
so I've heard 2 hours. I mean, we can start there.
We'll see if we can do it. I mean, the next meeting, you know, it's the meeting before
all right, move
school
on.
Starts. We've got a lot to do. So, okay,
on.
Upcoming meetings. You really want me to list all these meetings? All right. August 25th, 2014, regular board meeting, 7:30 p.m. Central Services. September 8th, 2014, regular board meeting, 7:30 p.m. Central Services. September 22nd, 2014, regular board meeting, 7:30 p.m. Central Services office. October 14th, my father's 80th birthday. 2014, regular board meeting, 7:30 p.m. Central Services office. And October 23rd, 2014, special board meeting, 7:30 p.m. Central Services office. Other matters. Are there any other matters to be considered by anyone? I have one, but I'll make it short just to let you guys know. I have talked to Paul. We've had, over the past 18 months, you know, the new board, there's just been a lot of little things about special ed. So I ask that we put that on the agenda at some point so that we can talk further about it in terms of, you know, number of people, what are we doing, philosophy. I mean, the board hasn't talked about that in a while. And so I've asked that it's on the agenda, but we'll figure out when it's the right time and prioritize it on the agenda. Okay. Public participation. Is there anyone present who would like to address the board this time? No? Okay.
I think you're supposed to wait till she replies.
Okay. Anybody like to participate?
I know. We don't matter anyway. It's the same five people.
Mr. Cooper. Yes, sir.
I'd like to follow up on the discussion that you gentlemen just had. I want to try to stay on time of the meeting. My best suggestion would be to take the board reports and limit it to 1 minute per person. Okay? And then you can spell out why there's someone not here tonight who goes to every board meeting in the world or super had, and I get to hear every detail of everything that went on, and that helps keep us here like inside a minute per member. I think would really
okay. We got that one.
Second is on this conversation. We can move to early, late, whenever if we don't follow up on what someone asks. There's no point in public participation. Under the last president's regime, I'm not sure anything I've ever brought up, and I shouldn't be absolute literal, but it sure seems like I don't think barely anything was ever followed up on. Okay. And the impression I got, unlike what I'm getting the last couple of meetings, was that whatever was being said out here was this, then you sit down if we need to get back to you. So I think follow-up is absolutely critical. In gaining the public's trust. And brought up a bunch of things tonight that are absolutely, to me at least, critical. There will be other issues, like a lot of people are here fortunate that I've stayed out of. I don't have kids in the system, so I didn't want to take up 3 minutes to talk about each of these movements about the technology. So I stick to finances, and I stick to my money being wasted. I think everybody feels that's important, but they don't necessarily have to come out every time. There have been two big issues I've seen over the last 2 years. It's this issue and the book banning whole thing. Otherwise, I could lay out a cat in between the foot. Okay, you guys know that. You see me here all the time. Two other real quick things. One is, you guys, if you don't know, there's been an email from the district. I have left emails that were not received by Dr. Gordon. I left an email for a FOIA I did that was never received. I actually left emails for some of the board members that I've never checked on. I don't know if you received them or not. In the last, it was probably over a month ago. So there's definitely an issue, and if you weren't aware of it, that's what I'm bringing up right now, so yeah, that you can at least...
Yeah.
Thank you for that.
And then the last thing is, and I don't know if anybody else is going to bring this up, but I was made aware that this past year we spent over $100,000 in substitute teacher costs not having to do with sicknesses or personal days. This was having to do with learning the ELBs or whatever that acronym is, and all the other acronyms and so on. $100,000 of our money was spent on teaching, on training teachers during time. We have bringing, we're insane. $100,000 that we spent that should never happen. And going forward, it's a brand new year. If we got to go ahead, you know, it's kind of like how when I was a kid, I never went to the dentist during school. Now things have changed. Parents do things like that. They, you know, school, whatever. It's not so important sometimes. We didn't take teachers out of the. I'll finish up. We didn't take teachers out of the room for things that were not critical.
Yep.
We're doing that way too much.
Okay.
It needs to stop. Zero. Zero. Thank you.
Thank you. You know, you're going to tease me, aren't you, with the...
Oh,
yeah.
No, I'll refrain from that, even though I still feel very strongly about that. I don't think you've heard me. I believe that you can write a tight AP for the K-5 based on the policy that you've adopted. I'm really very concerned about the fact that you're allowing an armored person for 6 through 8. Because even with a tight policy, your MDF, you're going to allow cameras because you're going to let them take pictures of their screen. So our kids are, I'm saying kids today are in the news left and right for sexting. So texting and cameras are still going to be enabled with the MDM. And that's a big concern. I think there's a huge can of worms there that you know, we're not addressing and we're jumping into it. And it's sort of a free-for-all doing. And John brought up a lot of those great points, that this is actually the age where those things are going to happen more than in the elementary. So it really disturbs me quite a bit, especially given the fact that there were 34 parents and counted that out, and not one of the parents. I did hear from teachers and from some of the kids about how they're using those devices during class, but I didn't have documented, and I did document very meticulously. I didn't have a single parent say that they felt that their child had to have the cell phone on them during school hours. They wanted it for before and after, but not during class time, except for maybe some medical, which actually you brought up based on a parent conversation, but not a parent that attended the session. Public participation. Town hall, good idea. I mean, you can't regulate that public comment can only be 10 minutes on a particular topic. That's just ridiculous. I don't think it's even legal. And obviously, if you have meetings that are going till 11, and I was a trustee in a town that had contentious issues on every agenda. So we were there till whenever, and 2 o'clock in the morning was just a sometimes, but it didn't happen because people were ticked off. And it's a clear sign that you need a communications person that's paying attention, right, to what's going on and can find better ways to communicate and mitigate some of these issues. Because if we're coming, we feel like we're not being heard.
I liked the I really do like the general structure, and Winfield does have. We did do that where we changed it. People could comment. It was exactly like that. You had the presentation, then the president would say, "Are there any public comments?" People would just line up. They would make their public comment really quick, and then the board would discuss it and vote on it. And at the end, if it was a very long meeting, they'd get to committee of the whole, and they'd go, "Okay, adjourn." And they just dump it all to the next meeting, unless there was something very critical within committee of the whole because it was too late. Okay. So there are some of those things that you can do, but
last point.
The idea of 10 minutes.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else?
I guess I start and just say this is a public meeting. It's not a privately held company. It's a public meeting. It's not your meeting. It's not my meeting. It's our meeting. So we need to get away from saying this is my park or their park. It's our meeting. So it's not your meeting. It's our meeting. And I'd also ask the board members, particularly Mr. Escalante, stop using terminology like revenue and special needs kids together. It's just not appropriate. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
No. Okay, I just wanted to kind of follow up with my earlier comments. I'm not surprised, actually, that you guys went ahead and put through what you had already put in place, because that gives the experience. What's funny, kind of, that you're talking about public participation at board meetings, because I really wasn't going to bother, because I did know that my comments would not change anybody's mind. I know that's the way it is, but I just thought I'd reiterate the point that Paul and I agree on, which is that a policy is only as good as it can be implemented. And I just question, truly, whether or not, and I think this is to Kenwood's point a little bit, the cell phone is the device with the best mobility, right? So it's in the back pocket. You don't know if it's off unless you look at it, right? And how easy is it to turn it back on? So the kids can go to the bathroom, right? And then what's to stop them from using their cell phone for a couple seconds in the bathroom? And maybe they're just texting their mom and it's harmless, but maybe they're taking a picture at the bathroom. I mean, we don't know, right? Because that's I think, the difference between a cell phone and these other devices. It's portability, it's mobility, and it's sort of how discreetly it can kind of be accessed, I guess, would be my point. I also think we have to question a little bit about whether or not the Chromebooks could do the things that the teachers are saying are so important. Can our Chromebooks do those things? I just think that question should be asked, because if they can, why bother with the cell phones, right? And then I just wanted to point out these are middle schoolers, and not all of them are going to have cell phones, and I just think that's a hard thing, right? When now everybody can have it, and my cell phone says, your cell phone. Right? Or you don't even have a cell phone. It's just one of those different it's hard in the community. You have a big range. As they talked about the reduced lunch needs at Hadley, those kids who are getting the free breakfast because they're not getting breakfast at home, do they have the iPhone 5C? I don't, or X or whatever? They don't. Are they going to feel a little bit like they should when everybody else does theirs? Maybe. Okay, and then just in terms of the your last discussion, I think something positive you could do. I've emailed the board and superintendent many times about being a wildfire or wildfire outlet boxes stuff, right? Never have I received anything back from anyone to just say, hey, got your email. Right. If you do that, I was like, I don't need to come. There's no point in being here. Because you're making the decision before. So that's why I always write these big emails. I'm guessing that you guys read them. But I have no idea if anyone's ever read them. So
thank you.
I'm sorry, I'm emotional, but
that's okay.
Those are my points.
Thank you.
I'm going to echo what others have said, and I have to tell you that I'm extremely surprised and disappointed in the decision that we made tonight about allowing students to carry on electronic devices. And I have to tell you that while I watched them, I don't leave having an understanding of why. How is it contributing to academics? How is it in response to a major safety breach that occurred, which is why we revisited the policy to begin with? How is this creating more safety? How is this ensuring we have better academics? And sure, there are lots of things. I have a cell phone. There are lots of things that they can do that are positive, but we're talking about middle schoolers. And I would echo all the issues that John brought up, and I really don't believe this is serving Hadley in an academic way. And quite honestly, the fact that you're looking at this in response to a major safety breach, you've revisited policy, you revised it, you are now telling everyone that you can carry it around, there is a much higher level of culpability that you as board members are carrying for the entire district. And I don't know if you're going to wait till another, you know, if there's a sexting event that occurs or something else, or what it's going to take to say that electronics can be great. And I think that's why we spent $200,000 on the Chromebooks. And I think that's why Dr. Gordon had gone out and asked, do we need anything else to support academics? And the response was no. No personal devices were needed for academic reasons. So I'm extremely confused when that was just communicated a month or two ago, and now we're saying we need these personal devices. I can understand the exceptions, electronic readers, and using it in that fashion for people who might find them useful, but to make it as a rule versus the exception, honestly, I think you're opening up Pandora's box, and I really would anticipate some strong community response to this.
Okay.
And I'm not so sure that you're going to get full support. So,
okay, thank you. Is there another point? Sorry.
I would like to echo the fact that I, as a parent, have taken a lot of time on the issues that have come up. My son is with Force Glen, and I was very upset about the safety issue. And I moved to Glen Ellyn for academics. And I put in a board email that there are now four families leaving Forest Glen because of safety academic issues, two families leaving from Lincoln. I don't see us moving in the direction of better academics. I see us as providing more technology. And even when I asked my daughter, why do you think they allow cell phones in the classroom? Her response was, because they want to say we have 21st century learning. I swear to God, I didn't say that. She said that.
Okay. And thank you for that.
Just the idea that technology equates with learning, it's
who is?
As good as it's being used.
Who's that?
Jennifer Ray. Hi. I didn't know if I was more disappointed tonight in the actual vote of 4-1 passing the policy, or how Mr. Kenwood was treated. I think that he brought fresh perspective to the table. As people have said, it looked like the decision was already made before this meeting. One board member in particular keeps trying to rush things through and doesn't seem to put a thoughtful process into things. Saying, let's get voting, let's go, let's move. I don't understand why you would get the Smoothwell update after passing this policy. I don't understand why there's nothing about PE classes and locker rooms in this policy, but there is about lunch. And then talking about the public participation, I would just appreciate everything being on your agenda. I know some of these things are done last minute, but for example, tonight you discussed special ed students being a revenue, which I take issue with. All day kindergarten, you introduced Erica and Michelle, and you also talked about the People's Resource Center, and that's nowhere to be found on the agenda. So if anybody was interested in those topics, we wouldn't know about it until we came to the meeting and we were in an hour or two of it. And I do believe the people who do show up at these meetings are a strong sample representation of the community. I didn't hear anyone here tonight say, this was a great policy. Where are they? Maybe you got emails. I'll believe you, but I don't know how many. It looked to me from the listening sessions and from the representation here tonight that we were all both on the same page, and I didn't hear anybody come out and disagree. So I think I'm more disappointed, though, in the behavior of some members not demonstrating open mindedness tonight.
Okay, thank you. Morning. All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for your comments. Where am I here? Adjourn to closed session. We have a need to go into closed session, so may I have a motion?
Motion.
To it. I got to read the reasons first.
Second.
May I have a motion to adjourn to closed session to discuss the purchase or lease of real property for the use of the district, including meetings held for the purpose of discussing whether a particular parcel should be acquired, the appointment, employment, compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal of specific employees of the district or legal counsel for the district, including hearing testimony on a complaint lodged against an employee or against legal counsel for the district to determine its validity. Motion?
Motion.
Second, please.
Second.
Excellent. The board will not be taking any action when it returns from closed session. Thank you and have a good night.
Aye.
Roll call.
Mr.
Yes.
Mr.
Yes.
Mr.
Yes.
Mr.
Yes.
Yes. Thank you, everyone. Have a great evening. All right, back in open session here. Thank you all for taking the time to be in closed session. May I have a motion to close the open session meeting?
I have a motion to close the...
May I have a second to
second.
That?
Second. Second the motion to open the
closed session. All right, we're done.